Steve, thank you very much. From time to time, we begin the show with a special guest. It doesn't happen often, but if royalty is in town, we say, what alternative do we have? Let's put somebody famous on right off the bat, and that's the case today, as John Lovitz is in studio with us. John is appearing at the Chicago Improv today through Sunday. How are you, John? Looking good.
Thank you. Great to be back in Chicago, I'll tell you that.
You know, the sun is coming out now that you've arrived. You're bringing the sun.
You are welcome.
You sure are a ray of sunshine. That's what you are. You're very, very welcome.
I love being here. I mean, the weather's so great this whole week. I've been here all week. It's fantastic.
This is the time of year you usually come here, right? Aren't you usually here right around August or September?
Yeah, Labor Day weekend. Yeah, they keep bringing me back. It's great. And they've already offered me to come back next year. And I haven't even done my shows yet.
Wow, shouldn't they wait?
I would think so.
All right, I want to start out with something, and I don't want this to be uncomfortable. I'm just curious. Can I ask you something because I'm curious?
I'm not gay.
That's not what I was going to ask.
Oh. I'm a Jew.
That's what I was going to ask.
That's not uncomfortable.
I was going to ask you that. 2 years ago when you came in, we interviewed you, and you drew diagrams on. You had five pieces of paper. And you drew diagrams of a tennis court. And you said to me, do you play tennis? And I said, I do play tennis. And you said, if I was here and hit the ball here, what would you do? And I said, I would hit the ball here. And you'd say, then I'd hit a backhand past you. And then you came to the second page and you said, if I stood here and hit the ball here, what would you do?
I don't remember any of that.
You don't remember any of that?
No.
But then you said to me, I want to challenge you to a tennis match. And I said, I'm on. You pick the time and the place. I want to play you in tennis.
I didn't say that.
You didn't
that
say
that? No. I do remember. I don't remember
said,
the little
let's
charts.
Play it. I go, I don't have any of my stuff. I know, you know.
But no, this time
it was pointless. I finished my shows.
Yes.
This is how good I've gotten, literally. I'm bragging, but it's true. I finished the shows this weekend. Then on Monday, I fly to New York. And then I have a wild card into the fourth round of the U.S. Open.
To watch it,
not that's
to
how good
not to play it, to watch
no.
it.
No,
to draw charts
you're
and graphs.
Play it. It's called a wild card. Isn't that wild?
That is wild. That's the
and,
name.
So I skipped the first three rounds. That's
they just
how
let
I've
you
done.
Right into the fourth round automatically.
Yes,
that's amazing.
And I'm not making that up. And it's fantastic. And that's how good I've gotten.
You may win.
They
it
saw
all
me. They said, "All right, well, you play a match. If you beat this person,
yes,
which we're convinced you won't." You can go right into pick a round. I go, okay, fourth round. They go, all right, fine. Because they didn't think I could do it. And then
that's amazing.
I creamed the guy.
And what, then was he said, a pro tennis player?
I don't know. Roger
Federer?
Something
he's pretty
like
good.
That.
He's a pretty good player.
So then he, it was Federer. So then he's like, all right, I'm out of the tournament.
Yeah.
So that's why he's not in it. And
wow.
I am.
That's impressive. That's impressive. But Wendy,
it's impressive to me.
For 2 years, John, my dream has been to be on a tennis court and play you in tennis. Will that dream ever happen? Can we ever play?
I don't know. You know, because I'm working and I got to rest for the shows.
Yeah, when would there be time?
In the daytime, there's a lot of open time. I did stand up for a while. There's a lot of open
well,
time
did,
in the daytime.
Did you do it like I did it? I don't think so. That's why you have a radio show.
You're right. No, that part's true. I'll give you that. I just got to show
that.
Did you
do an hour and a half show?
No, I didn't. I don't know who has the energy for that.
Interesting. And yet we do the same thing. It's like tennis. You hit the ball.
Yes.
I'm in tournaments. You know, they rate you. They rate you on players like 1 to 7. Like
yes.
1 is a beginner. 1.5, you're okay. 2 is on. 3, you're like a club player.
Right.
I think 6 is a college player, 7 you're a pro.
Sure.
So in California, Torrance, California, they're the headquarters of the United States Tennis Association, and they have a skills test to rate you.
Mm-hmm.
And I did it.
And what did they rate you as?
12.
A 12, awesome. John.
Look at and it that. Only goes to 7.
That's yeah. the highest anyone's ever been.
Right. I said, but it only goes to 7. They go, we know. We don't get it. But you're
that
rate,
good.
You're 12.
Have you ever missed a point ever?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
I'm
all right.
human.
All right.
My unforced errors are very low.
Oh, they are.
Maybe
well,
2 to 3 a match, but I'm serving anywhere from 200 to 300 miles an hour.
That's the
holy.
Nobody's
crap.
Ever served that fast.
That's they like, haven't.
Never. No.
Why do you think he's
I
a 12?
Had no idea.
Did you play as a kid?
Yeah, but you just have to have the right strings. And then you just hit it really hard.
That's true. That's basic tennis. That's so
I had no. I was playing tennis, and I would serve. They go, "That's good, faster."
Yes.
Okay. Then they kept going faster, and then they just keep hitting it faster. All right.
And you're at 300 miles per hour.
No, I'm kidding. It's, I'm about 120. That's true.
Right.
You think I'm lying.
No,
I'm
don't. I do not think you're lying.
I have Big Sur. The truth is about, I have a great teacher, Alex Olmedo, who won the Wimbledon champion in 59, beat Rod Laver. And, you know, of course I'm nowhere near as good as any pro, but I keep getting better, and that's what I enjoy about it.
Right.
So that is a little freaky, because I keep getting older,
right,
but I keep getting better. And that extends to every area of my life, ladies. That's
good to know.
Can I ask you, in March, there was a story about you with a much younger woman, Jessica Lowndes.
There you go.
24 years old? Somewhere
good
in there?
Job.
No, we're just friends. She's 27.
27.
I met her. I did that TV show, Hawaii Five-0.
Yeah.
And I met her. We became friends. Because I had a lot of downtime, so we're hanging out in Hawaii a lot. And she's a very funny girl. And a great songwriter, great singer. So she did a music video and asked me to be in it.
Yeah.
And then she said that she had hired a company that makes videos go viral. So they had a plan to, she would drop hints on her Twitter and Instagram that she was dating an older guy. And then after like 2 weeks, everyone would be like, who is it? Who is it? And then it revealed it was me.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, so we did it. And it went all over the world.
Yep.
It was nuts. And I thought, who cares who I'm with? I figured it would be big in England because of her. Because
sure.
She used to date a famous rugby player there. So they would always talk about her, who she's dating in England. But it went all over the world. It was crazy. And a lot of people were really pissed when they found out it wasn't true. A lot of guys,
especially
because they were like, oh, well, if he can get a pretty girl like that, imagine what I could get. You know, the idiots. And then of course, it's not true. And then they were all pissed at me. I dashed their hopes.
Oh.
As if they'd ever gotten, were ever with someone that pretty when they were that age.
Right. That's so true.
I mean, they're delusional.
They are delusional.
I, on the other hand, have had beautiful girlfriends. And yes, I could have dated her, but she's 27. It's too much time. I don't have time.
That's the problem.
What am I, 31 years older? I don't have time to teach her
right.
about love making,
right.
what to do.
But she said you had wise hands, John. I remember that quote. She said John Lovitz has wise hands.
Yeah, but I have to tell you something. That was not my hand. That was the hand of a guy who's older than me. And was ill.
Oh.
So if you look at his hand.
it's not a good shot.
No. It's got like lots of.
Liver spots and stuff.
Liver veiny. Spots and veiny. Yeah. And it's blue and purple. Because he was a very nice man. But he was sick.
Oh.
For a long time.
Oh.
You know. So I'm like, oh, and everyone thinks my hands look like that. Well, does my hand look like that?
No,
your hands
you have
look
great.
Fantastic.
You could be a hand
yes,
model.
Yes, that's right. I have beautiful hands.
Your hands are getting better looking as you age.
And beautiful feet.
Really?
Yes, all of my extremities.
That's how you close the show,
larger
right?
Larger and more beautiful.
I've seen John close the show with that. He shows people.
In fact,
his hands
I'm not saying which extremity, but I went to the USEA, which is the United States Extremity Association.
You did?
And they measured all my extremities.
What'd they say?
You know, they go from 1 to 7.
Right. What'd you get?
12.
Yes. A 12!
Look at better with age, like a fine wine.
A 12 on one of my extremities. And that's coincidence. I go, that's funny because that's when I'm ranked in tennis.
Right. It's the same number. That's
right.
Crazy. John Lovitz is here. It is crazy.
Blew me.
He's
going to
be
away.
At the Chicago Improv today through Sunday. He rates a 12 in extremities and in tennis. Go see him for that alone. Stick around. More coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. John Lovitz is here. He's appearing at the Chicago Improv today through Sunday. Go to chicago.improv.com. All your ticket information is there. John, we were saying off air,
yes.
Wendy was complimenting you on both your hands, and you were saying your feet are also amazing. You really do. I mean, all kidding aside, your skin is flawless.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Every makeup artist says you have beautiful skin. And I say, why? Why do you say that? They go, close. You have small pores.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you do.
Apparently, I'm not porous.
Right. Well, that's a good thing, I think. Don't you?
I'm Jewish, but I'm not.
You're not porous. No, why do you want to be porous?
Can I ask you an embarrassing question? No,
porous
it's not
crap.
Even...
Yes?
I love your dog, Jerry. I'm in love with your dog. Why don't
everyone
why didn't
is.
Jerry come in here with us?
He'd make a lot of noise and start crying.
He has an underbite like Bruce Springsteen.
And then, honestly, I had him with me on the other radio interviews. And at some point, he's like, get out.
Oh.
And he literally takes over the show.
Oh.
And I'm here to publicize my shows.
Sure.
Not his like, oh, today I took a walk. And it was really cool along the lake. And
yeah.
I met this poodle. You know, it's like, you don't get your own act. Tell your story on your own time.
Yeah. Yep.
I love him, but you know.
But at some point, there needs to be some separation.
Yeah, he's a pug chihuahua. In the movie Mother's Day, I play a character and Gary Marshall, God rest his soul, what a nice man, and he let the dog be in it. And then I'll be in Celebrity Apprentice on January 2nd, and Jerry, my dog's all over it. He's a pug chihuahua, and he's got this underbite. He's a very bright dog. You know, people that have pets, they go, it's like my kids. That's what he's like. I bring him everywhere.
Mm-hmm. You're a furry kid. He's not that furry, though. Short hair.
All right. I don't know if that's a compliment.
That is a compliment, John.
A compliment.
That is a definite compliment. Since you brought up Gary Marshall, Wendy and I have been, and a lot
the
of
greatest
people have
guy. So sad, so sudden.
Yeah, I know.
I'm still in shock when I say it. I go, because I just saw him. I just saw him in the March at the premiere of the movie, and I'm just grateful I got to work with him where he directed me in a movie. I've known him for 30 years, and the nicest man. Everybody loved him, and he was as funny as any comedian, and just terrific person. And
League of Their Own, is that the movie he directed you in?
No, Penny Marshall sister.
Right.
But he was in it, and I met him through her, and because he goes, and he was always nice to me. He goes, well, you're friends with my sister. She says you're great, so, you know, I love you too. And
it
was just couldn't have been nicer, and it's just a real out of the blue thing that happened.
We were talking about, because of Gene Wilder's passing on Monday, how those people like Gary Marshall or Gary Shandling or the list goes on and on and on. It means, even if you haven't met those people, it means a lot to you because they've made you laugh so many times over the years.
Yeah, right. I mean, just, you know, all the performers I grew up watching, and then when they pass away, you feel sad.
Yeah.
Like, you know who really made me feel sad? This sounds like a joke, but it isn't. Was Bob Keesham. He was Captain Kangaroo.
Sure.
Yep.
And you grow up with him as a kid, and then, you know, he died, and you go, wait, what?
Yeah.
You know, and he almost felt like he was your grandfather for your life, you know. But it's, yeah, you, when you get on television, then they go, well, you're in someone's living room, you're at their home, and so they just feel close to you, like they know you.
Yep. I'm like
and
that
they
with
don't.
No, they definitely
they don't know you at all.
I'm like that with Bob and Ray. When both, first Ray Goulding died, and then Bob Elliott died, and both of those, I'm like, oh, that's too bad. And they were older guys. It wasn't a shock, but still.
It's still a shock.
I know. Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah.
We're getting to be that age, too, all of us, you know.
Yep.
We're all on our way out. And
I know.
I just know, you know, in 100 years, somebody will be listening to this interview and say, you know, John Lovitz, not only was he very funny, he was one of the best tennis players in history.
Right. And such soft skin.
During the 21st century.
Incredible skin.
Century.
The new apprentice doesn't have Trump for obvious reasons, but it's Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's the one who's fronting the new apprentice?
Yes, correct.
What was that like?
Well, I've known him for years, too, and I'm friends with him. So if you know him, he teases all his friends, and if he likes you. So he teases me a lot during the show. We were like, here we are inside this beautiful theater. John, he goes, you know, and he goes, and outside, you know, it's right next to a gymnasium. John, have you ever seen a gym from the inside?
You could sue him for that.
No, he's my friend.
Oh,
it, it made me laugh. He was very happy I was doing the show. So he had all these people writing him jokes about me. But he's a great guy. And, you know, can't say, you know, who won or anything like that.
Right.
But I can say that if you watch the show and you really listen to Arnold when he's talking to us in the boardroom, and I noticed it, I said, you know, I know what you're doing. What he really is doing is he's using it as a platform to teach people the tools to be successful and the mental mindset that you have to be really successful. So you can really learn a lot.
Yeah. I'm sure of it.
I should watch
it. And that's what he's doing, you know, when he does that show. Plus, you know, when it's Celebrity Apprentice, you're raising money for charities. So he feels great about that. He goes, it's a great way to raise money. And you do. And at one point I raised a lot of money, but my charity was a St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. But all the charities that everybody picked were great. But I picked that one because it's like 83 cents out of every dollar goes to the research and that hospital, you know, it's sad if your child gets cancer. It's horrible, of course, but if they do, this is the place you go, and they put up the housing for you,
and they don't
the
charge
whole
you.
Family, and they pay for all the food.
Yeah,
they pay for everything transportation, housing, food for your whole family.
At a time when you need
it. And all the
most.
Medical costs for your family. And they don't charge anything. They cover it all, 100%. And a lot of research charities, you know, they want to find the cure for a disease. And they don't share the research because if they get the drug that cures the disease, they'll get all the money, which is, you know, billions.
Yeah.
But St. Jude's, they share all their research for free to research places all over the world.
Sure.
So they're really, as they say, they're helping children all over the world. So and Danny Thomas, the comedian, yep. started it. So I felt a connection there as comedian. So that's why I picked it.
Very, very good.
Good choice.
Thanks for coming by.
And I have beautiful skin.
Your skin is flawless, John. Your skin is flawless. Go see John
Lovitz.
I
wish my weight was flawless.
Come on. You're going to be fine.
Yeah. You should do Oil of Olay commercials.
I got to lose a lot of weight.
Seriously, you look great. You should do Oil of Olay commercials. Maybe they should.
Well, I'd like to, and I like to sing that song. I'm very good at singing.
Do you want to do a little bit of it now?
The Oil of Olay. How does it go? No, that's Saint-Tropez tan.
Bandisolet for the Saint-Tropez tan. That one?
Bandisolet for the Saint-Tropez tan.
That's beautiful.
That's goosebumps.
John, I used to think they were singing Band du Soleil for your central places. That's what I thought they were saying.
Oh,
I know what they meant.
I would
That's
get so many songs. You know the Jefferson Airplane, that song, I'm Your Venus, I'm Your Fire at Your Desire. When I heard in high school, I thought it was I'm Your Fetus.
Yep.
I'm Your Fire, Georgia Fire. And my girlfriend, I had a girlfriend, she looked at me, she goes, what?
I'm Your Fetus.
Georgia Fire? I go, well, like what is that what they're saying? She's like, no. It's not even close.
Shocking blue.
I'm Your Fetus. I'm Your Fire, Georgia Fire.
That's a hit. Now we got a
but
hit.
But it sounds like, because they're going, I'm Your Fetus. I'm Your Fire, Georgia Sire. At Your Desire, but it sounds like going, Georgia Fire.
Sounds like it.
Go see John Lovitz. He's at the Chicago Improv today through Sunday.
And I'll be on stage with my hands.
I know. His hands will
Check
be there.
Check out his hands.
You're going to love
they
his hands.
They are nice, aren't they?
Stunning.
Sweet.
Stunning.
See?
Sweet Chicago, hands.
Not just me that thinks so.
Chicago.improv.com is your best bet. Thanks, John.
Thank you. And if I'm telling the truth about my hands and skin, must be telling the truth about the tennis.
I bet.
And the extremities. Ladies.
Thanks, John. More after this. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. WGN 312-981-7200.
Some weirdness happened.
But we know when we have John Lovitz in the studio, it's going to get weird, don't we? I mean,
well,
that's
you know
a given.
More than I do. I kind of forget.
Yeah, he. First of all, he's squelching my dream. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
I have a dream, and it's a simple dream, and that's just to play him in tennis. That's all I want. A couple years ago, I'm not making this up. He had all these papers, and he's drawing diagrams of courts, and he's saying, "If I hit it to your backhand, what would you do?" And I'd say, "I'd hit it back over your head. I'd lob you so you couldn't get it. I'd jump up very high and I'd smash it so you couldn't hit it. Now, what would you do?"
I bet he doesn't even play tennis.
I don't know. He always talks about it, but then when I want to, because seriously, I've left open time all weekend because I knew he was here through Sunday, and the guys that I play with on the weekend, I said, hold me back. Don't. I may have a match this weekend with somebody, so don't let me see what happens. And I said to him, I can play tomorrow. I can play Saturday. I can play Sunday. No, you wouldn't get any points off of me. It'd be embarrassing for you.
He's just talking. I bet he doesn't even play at all.
In the studio, here's what he has me do during the commercial break. He goes, show me your backhand. I go, well, I don't have a racket or tennis balls. Just show me how you'd hit it. So then no matter what I do, he goes, that's ridiculous. Nobody can hit a ball like that. Show me your serve. And I go, oh, John, it's arbitrary. There's no, I just want to see what it would look like. So then I do it and he laughs and he goes, you call that a serve? I go, no, because it's not real tennis. It's just, it's pantomime tennis. Well, it's ridiculous. You can't go on a court with me. You'll embarrass both of us.
I'm telling you, I don't see him as being a tennis pro. I just don't.
He always talks about he takes lessons with former pros, and that's great. But
well, taking lessons doesn't mean
former pro tennis players.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
But still, taking lessons. If you're good, all of a sudden you don't have to take lessons anymore, right?
Right. But the very first time 2 years ago, he challenged me. He goes, "I want to go out and play," and then I go, "Oh, great. Let's pick a time. Let's pick a place."
He doesn't know you're the guy that will say yes. Let's do it and get your date book out.
Right, that's what I did.
I know. And you brought two tennis rackets today just in case?
I brought full tennis regalia in my car. I've got two rackets. I've got everything. And I would say to him, You pick the racket. You pick whichever one you want. I also, there's a friend of mine who has a tennis shop, and I said, he's coming into town this week. Can I bring him in if he doesn't have any equipment? Yeah, we'll set him up. We'll get him whatever he needs.
Did you tell him that?
Yeah.
I just have dog hair all over me.
Because why?
Because he...
Oh, because
as
his
he
dog?
Was playing fake air tennis with you, he threw Jerry into my arms.
Right.
And it's a short-haired dog,
too.
And short-haired dogs just... Like a porcupine. The yeah. quills come out all over my black sweater.
Yeah, yeah. That said, I love him. Whenever he's here...
I was going to say, so next time he's available...
Oh, he'll never play you.
Steve,
he won't.
2.5 months ago, we got a list of who's going to be at Zany's for the next 3 months. And his name was on there. So we put a note. Kevin wrote a note to Tony, the guy who runs the improv, saying, remind John, he said last time, don't let me forget to bring my tennis stuff. So we didn't hear back, and then yesterday we got an email saying, oh, it's impossible. I can't possibly play you.
Can I tell you something, though? If he has shows coming up,
yeah,
you know, maybe he's more like me than you, where more than one thing in a day is too much.
When you do stand-up, you have 22 hours of downtime every day. You work for an hour or two a night. Like,
I
there's
know,
nights,
but don't...
like tonight he's got one show, so he'll be on stage for an hour. So that leaves 23 open hours. And I know he's doing press, but I can't tell you how much downtime there is when you're traveling and doing stand-up. You're just sitting watching TV. That's it.
You sound like you're whining.
I
know
you
wanted to play him.
I'm just saying it would be the easiest thing in the world, especially when, like, he threw the challenge down. He's the first one who said, yeah, I want to play you. And then all of a sudden I go, yeah, let's play.
Why don't you play against the wall, do your imitation of him, and you can pretend you're playing him.
Maybe I'll have to do that.
Hey, nice shot, Bill.
People do that, though, like, let's have lunch. You know how many times I say that to people and I never actually think it's going to happen?
Right. But you don't brag about being the best lunch eater of all time.
I am,
he
though.
He was just here for...
You're goes without saying.
You
no
heard
need
him
to brag.
For 35 minutes going, nah, I was ranked 12th in the world. You know, he's just making stuff up. But then when you go, all right, well, let's see what you got. I can't play. I'm too busy.
I don't believe a word out of his mouth ever.
That's part of the charm
I
of
know.
Him.
Isn't he a challenge every time you guys talk to him?
Yeah.
Right, Bill? You've had him on before.
Several
we
times.
Have, yeah.
Yeah.
He just, I just can't believe how different comedians are in real life. Gilbert Gottfried's another one that is just very different off the air.
Oh, extremely different.
Emo.
But again, as different
I've
as can be.
I've never seen that side of him. You've been a stand-up comic. You've seen this.
The real side?
This is shocking to me.
It's so funny because off air, now keep in mind, John Lovitz hit national prominence by playing a liar character. That's what he did is he lied. So then he's upset with the two politicians that are running for president. All these people do is lie. You can't believe anybody. And I go, I know. I'm like trying to draw the parallel.
Right.
Isn't that weird that somebody becomes so famous just from lying? Oh, it's sick. You can't believe a word out of their mouths. I'm the best tennis player in the world.
I'm ranked 12 out of
in the world.
1 to 7.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess it makes sense.
Nothing makes sense. I just know that I'm sure he, at the time, like, sure, we'll play sometime, because he likes tennis. You
right.
like tennis. You
right.
love tennis.
Yeah.
But he knew it was never going
to
happen.
But then every time I see him and bring it up, he either wants to draw pictures of people playing tennis or pretend we play pantomime tennis.
I bet you he doesn't even play.
Is that true?
Have I, been I don't know. Wouldn't that be
I've
funny?
I've been rooked. Yeah.
Because your eyes light up, you're like you're giddy as a little schoolgirl. Like John Lovitz is coming in, maybe today's the day.
And he keeps pulling he's like Lucy pulling the football away as I go to kick it every time.
Although the dog Jerry said he'd play ping
I'm
pong.
I'm
going to
play
with
ping pong with Jerry the dog later.
Because he's small, he has to sit right on the table.
No, that's fine.
Part pug and chihuahua, and sheds a lot.
Yeah, a lot of shedding. All right, we'll take a break, and then we have more show for you, including a recall that you need to know about.
Warning, warning.
Warning, everybody. We'll tell you that next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, word of a recall that could affect some of you. What's going on in the world of recalls, Wendy?
All right, I got this from my local patch. You know, the newspapers.
The one that helps you stop smoking?
Yes. It actually helps me stop reading newspapers.
Oh, it does.
So it's kind of not working
How
properly.
How about that?
People who love to snack on those little Entenmann's Little Bite brownies and muffins may want to check their pantries.
Because why?
I said pantries.
Yeah.
Bimbo Bakeries, which is really Bimbo.
Wait, say that again?
Bimbo. B-I-M-B-O.
Oh.
Bimbo. They have Bimbo.
It the name makes us giggle, though.
It does.
Because it sounds like a woman who has loose morals is cooking our food.
Yes. The maker of Entenmann's products has issued a voluntary recall. Some snack foods made right here in Illinois. I buy these things all the time. They have little blueberry muffins, little baby ones.
Oh, yeah,
ones.
Sure. I've seen those.
Yeah, and chocolate chip ones.
Yes.
The recall was prompted after customers told the company about finding, quote, small pieces of plastic in their brownies and muffins.
Oh, no.
One injury was reported, according to the company. The plastic pieces could cause a choking or cutting hazard, the company said.
Oh.
Could cut your throat. Bimbo Bakeries said the contamination was caused by a manufacturing failure at a contract manufacturer's bakery right here in Illinois. According to a media release, Bimbo, operated by Mexico-based Grupo Bimbo, is the largest bakery company in the United States.
What does that translate to in English, Wendy?
A group of bimbos.
A group of bimbos.
Well, your accent is perfect, by the way.
Thank you very much. The recall...
You should have gone with Trump yesterday. To help
we
gotta navigate.
Talk about that. This recall affects 4 Little Bites products shipped to retail stores over the past 2 weeks. So if you have any of these, and you can go online to get the number on it, because I'm not giving all this information.
The product numbers?
Yes. Entenmann's Little Bites Fudge Brownies, the 5-pack. I get those all the time. The Little Bites Chocolate Chip Muffins, get those. These are all Entenmann's. Little Bites 10-pack of Chocolate Chip Muffins. And the Little Bites variety pack. It's 20-pack.
They could argue that part of the variety pack is some have plastic in it. Because some people like their brownies with plastic. Myself, I say no. But
I like nuts.
Nuts are good in a brownie, but plastic sparingly.
Consumers who have purchased potentially contaminated products are advised to dispose of them or return them to place of purchase for a full refund.
Bring them to your local Bimbo. These are for you. I heard on the radio they're bad for me. You can have them.
I'm great. I'm going to get home. You know how many little muffins are going to be on my porch?
Up. Hey, there's a party going on at this house.
You may call Bimbo, a.k.a. Bimbo Bakeries, at 1-800-984-0989, 24 hours a day. So if you have these,
this is serious.
1-800-984-0989.
That would be terrible to bite into a brownie and get a piece of plastic like that.
Depends how big it is.
Yeah.
If it's real tiny, you wouldn't even notice it.
But these, if I know these, and I don't, I mean, you get them regularly. I think I've passed them in the aisle. They're like a third of the size of a regular muffin or brownie, right?
Yeah,
they're really small. Like you could put them in the palm of your hand almost.
Well, you could. You could put a few of them, yeah.
Yep.
They're tiny. But we don't get them all the time, but we have. The brownie bites are really good.
Yeah.
So be careful.
Without the plastic.
Yeah,
don't get the plastic ones.
All right. What do we have coming up? I just want to say that we were waiting for Donald Trump to speak yesterday after visiting the Mexican president.
Yes.
And it was delayed, but then he did ultimately speak. And I am listening to this man going, what have they done with him? He was eloquent. He was calm. He seemed to, I really love America.
Well, the difference
is. It shocked
me.
And
I know this seems obvious, but it's true. The difference with him is when he is on a teleprompter and when he's not on a teleprompter, he prefers to just speak off the top of his head.
Right.
That's your classic Donald Trump. So in an instance like yesterday, where I guess there was just too much at stake to do this. You know, since they brought in a new management team, he's doing less and less of that speak off the top of his head Donald
right.
Trump and more of the speak off the speech that's already been written Donald Trump. So yesterday was a prime example of him kind of staying.
It was pretty amazing. I have to tell you, I'm listening to it going,
but he
sounded sedated to me. If
but
you
then
want to
did
know
you
the
watch
truth.
Him last night?
Yeah, well, that's my point.
That's way back.
The best parts last night you could tell is when he stopped reading the prompter.
Right.
When he just started looking straight ahead, it's like, okay, here we go.
But I must admit that I'm listening to him speak in Mexico going, you know, we're all worried about how he's going to handle foreign policy. He seems to be doing a pretty dynamite job right about now. It just caught my attention, and then listening to him last night, it to me that negated everything he just did correctly. It's like totally two separate people. It's Jekyll and Hyde.
On CNBC, they ran a montage of a bunch of different speeches, where, and I mean, it's common knowledge at this point, he talks about the wall and then he talks about Mexico and they're going to pay for it. And at various venues around the country, that's been the speech. And then he got to Mexico and the wall was brought up sparingly, but never who was going to pay for it.
Yes, but then that's not what the Mexican president said.
Right. The president, Peña, could have ended Donald Trump's run for the White House yesterday afternoon.
By doing what?
Well, Donald Trump said, we talked about the wall, but we didn't talk about who was going to pay for it. We didn't discuss it. You know, that's for a later time.
Yeah.
And then the president, Peña Nieto, said, later tweeted out, we did talk about who's going to pay for it, and I told him I wasn't. So had at that moment, with all the press there and Trump standing beside him, had Peña Nieto said, we did talk about it, I told him I'm not going to pay for it, that would have just revealed him.
So why didn't he do that?
Well, I think
he's well-mannered.
Yeah, you know, it's diplomatically not very nice, you know, to stand next to.
But then he takes it to Twitter.
Yeah, right. I mean, so it's, I don't know where the win was there, but we were talking about it in here. It's like, well, you know, it'd be hard if you can imagine the president standing next to another world leader, you know, saying, well, he just lied to you.
Would be unique, but what isn't in this whole campaign?
But what a strange way to get off on hopefully some sort of a new relationship than right off the bat after that first meeting with him. For Donald Trump to say in front of everybody, hey, we talked about the wall, but not who's going to pay for it, when the reality was that's not the way it played out.
Right. So if you're the Mexican president, you can say, well, I might have to work with this guy, so I don't want to, you know, humiliate him in public by basically calling him a liar.
Right.
But what an awful precedent that set.
But then he did in Twitter, you know, 45 minutes later. So
still didn't do it face-to-face,
no.
Didn't, you know, and not everybody's on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what this makes him think of him, though. It's like he's a liar. How can you proceed to do business with someone like that in the future?
But going into yesterday, there was already, it wasn't bad blood, but there was already some mistrust.
All his comments about deporting people and even the wall. And, you know, I'm telling you, man, I'm listening to it happening as he was speaking in Mexico, and I just want the safety of America. I love our country. I was getting sucked into it, Bill.
Well, here's the thing, and I don't think this will ever happen, but I don't ever want to be called a friend by Donald Trump.
Right. That was part of the speech yesterday.
That's kind of the kiss of death.
I call him my friend.
I consider him my friend.
Yeah.
I thought that was great.
Yeah, but then he called him a liar later.
Just hours later.
That's the point, is the being called a friend doesn't mean a lot.
No, it doesn't.
But now, are people watching this? Because really, I'm not saying I was ready to jump ship, but I was pretty impressed with what I was hearing. Because really, that's my biggest fear is Donald Trump.
What specifically did you hear that impressed you, other than that he didn't sound unnormal?
He sounded sedated, which is how I like my Donald Trump, just more
mellow.
But that
can't impress you, the fact
that what he was saying, what that friend line worked for me, where he's saying, you know, we just want our country to be safe. I love America. I'm telling you, I wasn't going to jump on his bandwagon, but it's like he surprised me. It's like, wow, he really can pull this off if he wants to. And then comes back to where Phoenix and just completely derailed what he just did.
Well, that's what a lot of people who know more about it are saying, that he really pulled off the stagecraft of it in Mexico City.
Beautifully.
It looked good for him. But then
stick with that.
But I think that, you know, the other thing, give him his due. Look at the schedule. You know, I think he had a fundraiser in California yesterday, flew to Mexico City for a meeting, back to Phoenix for this speech that was, you know, at 9:30, was wrapping up, I think, at about 10 o'clock our time, and spoke this morning to the American Legion in Cincinnati.
Yeah. Oh, it's a grueling schedule. But it will be like that all the way through November. That's the schedule. There's nothing you can do.
That's what you do when you're running for president.
All right. If you want to jump in on this, we'd love to hear from you. We'll do some news. Steve has the news, but then more discussion at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. I have to tell you something. Yesterday, I was listening to Rokan and Anna DeVlantis on the way home, and the press conference that we thought we might have gotten from Donald Trump in Mexico City happened, and I was listening, and it was a different Donald Trump. It truly was. He was calm. He was well-spoken. Quite honestly, this is the first time I thought he sounded almost presidential.
He's done this a little bit. Like I said, they changed his campaign staff a little bit.
Yep.
And since changing the staff,
the softer,
you're seeing...
kinder, gentler Trump.
Yeah, they're doing a little bit more of this.
And I was sucked in. I have to say, you know, he's talking about how much he loves this country, wants to keep us safe. Mexico wants to be safe. There are drugs coming in. It's bad for everyone. He went on to say we discussed the wall, but it was just kind of a preliminary discussion. We didn't really discuss who was going to pay for it. That didn't really come up. He leaves. He goes to Phoenix, was it? And then the president of Mexico says, oh, yeah, he said that we have to pay for it and we're not paying for it.
Right.
So, interestingly, someone texted, you're assuming that the Mexican president was telling the truth and that Trump was lying. You know what they say about assume, but that's when you go with track record. And you know what? Trump then comes home and says, oh, no. He says at the press conference in Mexico City, we didn't really discuss it or who's going to pay for it. And then he comes home in Phoenix and says, you know, they're paying for it. It's like he did a complete turnaround and went back to his usual Trump self.
Yeah. Conveniently, when the two presidents, or I shouldn't say two presidents, when the president of Mexico and the hopeful, the presidential hopeful Donald Trump were not in the same room, that's when things, quote unquote, got real for some reason. It should have happened then and there.
And my biggest fear with Donald Trump is how he deals with foreign policy. And I have to tell you, I was a little impressed with the way he was speaking so eloquently. And then the real Trump came back to the States and talked again. And I changed my view. Mary, you know what I'm talking about, don't you?
Yeah, that's what's really scary to me, is that people nowadays live in the moment, and they're going to hear him say, you know, be so calm and kind and all that. Oh, he's changed his ways. We're going to vote for him now. Without realizing that 2 minutes later, he's going to go back to being who he was.
Well, he proved it last night. When I Correct. Was listening to him on the way home, I really thought, you know what? Maybe he does know what he's doing. He's just a little rough around the edges. But then when he came back to the States and Trump became Trump again, then it's like, okay, I'm pretty sure I'm not jumping ship.
Well, what they're trying to do, or it seems like they're trying to do, is court both fan bases. He doesn't want to lose the core Trump fan. I won't even say voter, because he himself refers to them as fans of
right.
his. Where those people liked him because he was, we're going to build a wall and they're going to pay for it. If they don't like it,
that
too bad.
That cheers more than anything, which shocks me.
He pulls it out all the time. But then he's also trying to woo new people.
And the
like
Republicans.
Yourself. Yeah.
He's trying to show the Republicans I can be your...
Right. I'm a little more bendable.
Yes.
So depending on where he is and who's in the room with him, you're going to get different flavors of him.
I'm worn out trying to figure out which one.
Don't you think that... with his change in staff, that if this doesn't gain him any more votes or any more followers, mm-hmm. that there'll be another change in staff?
Oh.
It seems like he keeps changing staff in order to get himself in a better position.
Yeah, yeah. That's...
And you can only change so many times, because then you just are continually flip-flopping on your presentation and on your views.
Right.
Maybe that's why I couldn't sleep last night. I woke up at 2:30.
Because of this?
I don't know. It's just I realized we are backed up against the wall, and I don't know what to do.
No, there might not be a wall.
Oh, that's right. All right, good point. Mary, thank you so much for calling.
Thanks.
We appreciate
sure.
it. Speaking of the wall, Jim has an idea about the wall. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi, guys. Love your show.
Thank you.
Hey, my thoughts are this. If we give... hypothetically, of course, if we give Mexico $1 billion a year and whatever,
yeah,
I say what we're going to do is we will subtract the cost of the wall from that and then give them the balance. So say the wall costs $500 million, we'll only give them $500 million, and that's how they're going to pay for it.
You're not the first to suggest that that would be the best way of doing this. But you can't do that without their knowledge of it, certainly. They have to be in on this payment plan or lack of payment plan. There's no way in the world Mexico would agree to this. It's impossible.
I agree. And just for the record, I think the whole concept of going with building a wall is ridiculous. And I don't like either candidate, so I'm in a conundrum myself.
I know.
It's crazy. It's like voting for two ADHD kids. Which one do you choose?
The one who can do it more successfully, I guess.
Well, that must be either you guys or me, because I don't think these yahoos can do it.
All right. Well, thank you, Jim. We appreciate your call. We need to talk to...
That's a strange comparison.
Well, you can function properly with ADHD.
No, I know.
I'm proof of that. Tom.
Well, good morning. Enjoy your show. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Thank you.
Everything that he said in the speech that we heard last night ought to be of no surprise. I tend to be conservative libertarian, and 14 months ago when this thing started, I thought to myself, it could never wind up this way. But the bottom line is, Trump has convinced 13 or 14 million Americans to fall for his nonsense and choose him over 17 qualified candidates. And now here's the Republican Party with a demagogue psychopath. And there's no other way to say what he is and what he's going to do. There is a third way out. Gary Johnson is on all 50 ballots, in all 50 states, excuse me. He's a proven two-term governor of a border state. And between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, I just wish the media would speak more to what the reality out of this national nightmare is.
And I'm wondering now if Gary Johnson got the votes he needed to participate in the debate.
He needed to be at 15%, and the last tally I saw, he was below.
He needs to be at 15%, and the presidential debate committee is not an open market. It is run by the Democrats and Republicans with big cheeses in charge. It's in their self-interest to keep them out.
Sure.
I think there's five polls that he needs to qualify in, including the Times, the Post, and CBS or something. It's totally rigged against the American people at least getting the chance to see and listen to what Johnson has to say. People aren't going to vote for him if they don't know who he is.
Absolutely true.
And that's, I really admire you for entertaining the call, and I just wish that more media would discuss this. If this Trumpism thing that's a nightmare has come on in 14 months, can't we shake out of the nightmare in the next three after Johnson takes the stage in a debate next month?
I'll tell you something. I am going to be doing a little more research on Gary Johnson. I'm not sold on Hillary Clinton, and I'm not even caring so much about, Trump lies. They all lie. We got to let you go because your phone's pretty bad, Tom, but thank you for calling. They're all liars, in my opinion.
All right. Let's operate under the belief that all of them are liars, because it's hard to argue that.
Yeah, I mean, it almost seems like
it's a job requirement in politics.
Agreed.
To embellish, stretch the truth,
tell
lie.
People what they want to hear.
Yeah. All right. So I remember I had a science professor, poli-science professor at school, who told us in college that the most dangerous liar is somebody who just doesn't lie, but mixes truths with lies, because you never know. You're always off balance. You're like, well, that he said that and that was true, and he said that and that was true. So I don't know what to do with that next one. He was telling a lot of truths, but he said, like a good pitcher in the major leagues, where you mix up fastballs and curveballs and your occasional slider or a changeup, you just don't know. And that's how I keep feeling listening to, I hate to say it, every one of the candidates is, I go, oh, okay, that you got me with that. That's true. Wait, is that true? Because I don't know. And I swear to you, I tried to do so much online checking of facts after any of these speeches. And even those are like, they go, yeah, about 40% of what that guy said or what that woman said was true. That's not enough.
I got to start checking into Gary Johnson's Truth-O-Meter.
See what it says. All right, we've got more calls on this. We're at 312-981-7200. We would love to hear from you. What are your thoughts? We're talking about yesterday's Trump action, both in Mexico and then back here in the United States. What do you make of all this? It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Let Roger Waters build the wall.
What's in it for Mexico to pay for it? You can't fool them. I mean, several people have said, including one of our callers earlier, just take it out of the money, that transpires between the two countries. Just take it out of that. Make some sort of a payment plan. Don't give them the money. Whatever the wall costs, pull that out of the money that we give them in trade. but you have to let them know. They're not going to agree to that. What would be in it for Mexico to say, yeah, we'll pay for half of the wall. We'll pay for a third of the wall. You pick a number. We'll pay for it. They're not going to do it. It's not in their best interest to do it.
Can I tell you, if I want to build a fence in my yard to keep the neighbor's kids from running through my yard, I can't have them pay for it.
Right.
I put the fence up.
Right.
I would not go wall. I would just go fence.
There's also the idea that they could, if the, let's say the wall was built. Let's say everybody was in agreement. Yes, the wall is happening. We're building the wall. You could probably tunnel underneath the wall, because Trump keeps talking about making the wall higher. Every time you say something right. He doesn't like, he goes, all right, that's going to be an extra 5 feet on the wall. You could tunnel underneath a wall.
Well, somebody's going to be there watching.
Everywhere.
There's going to be people standing on top everywhere. Of the wall, the whole circumference of it.
The wall's not happening. The wall is it's a fantasy. I can't believe it gets all the tracking.
Everybody wants the wall. All the supporters. I'm telling you, that is, you know, when you're up on stage introducing a band and they've just played and you come back out and you go, how about that? That is cheap applause.
Right.
All he has to do is say, the wall.
Right.
And everybody goes nuts.
And they're
nuts.
Paying for it. That's that montage on CNBC yesterday, because he's pulled it out countless times. And every time it's just the crowd just does. They lose it. Wall. I've never seen so many people thrilled for a barrier in my life. And then he gets to the part about them paying for it, and then it's just pandemonium. It's like Oprah giving away cars.
I know. I don't really understand it. I don't know which call to take here, Bill, because we don't have a lot of time. So, Dale, it's up to you, and you got about a minute.
Okay. Love your guys' show.
Thank you.
And yesterday, if you looked, you know, during the conference there, you had the Mexican president and you had Trump. Basically, you were looking at two losers.
Because
the
why?
Mexican president's favorability is like 23%.
Yeah, he's not very popular.
Yeah, he's not.
And, you know, so, and then you got Trump, whose favorability with all the minorities, whatever, is like 3%. So, you know, it's like, you know, okay, you had to pick between two losers. And the other thing with this guy that just called saying, well, we'll just take it out of the money that from trade and all this stuff, which he could probably do that, because didn't he do that to the workers that worked on his casinos and stuff?
Well, he
said, you know, I owe you this much, but, you know, I'm only going to pay you for this much.
Yep.
And he stiffed them, you know. So why wouldn't he stiff a country?
So keep doing it. Know? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It'll
never work. We're doomed, everybody.
Thank you, Glum.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling, Dale. I don't know what to say.
It's too bad this can't run easier and smoother. It just, if for some reason, it can't. But it's too bad, and it's very surprising that Hillary Clinton didn't jump this a little earlier. This seems like more the kind of thing that she would have wanted to get ahead of instead of Trump. It all came together very, very quickly, within a day. And some people have said that was a better thing for security reasons, you know, that there was no time to plan any kind of opposition to his visit. So maybe that was one of the factors. But
no one likes her either. Her approval rating is down the lowest it's ever
I'm
been.
I'm seeing that too. Yeah.
I really am.
It's hard to get fired up. I mean, even if you love politics, it's very hard to get fired up about the positive aspect of this campaign on either side. It just is.
I have a feeling I'm not going to be happy either way.
Well, you're not the only one. And I'll be honest with you. I know you keep saying you got to look into Johnson, you got to look into Johnson.
There's no way he can win.
That's
throwing away your vote. But if enough people are so disgusted, is it?
But read up on him.
He's not the answer either.
Right. He's not the pot at the end of the rainbow either.
Can't we just go without anybody in charge for a while, see how that goes?
The way the state's going without a budget? We're still running.
Yes.
The state's still running. We don't have a budget. Let's go a couple years without a president and see what happens.
It might be better. It might be worse.
Right.
But at least we'll know.
We'll give it an experiment. All right. A quick break. Some news. Kim with the news and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you laugh. love films, then Dean's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard points.
He's Dean, Bill.
You know, if there's one constant in the universe, Wendy, it is that he is Dean, and he will be Dean. He's always been Dean, and he's going to be Dean forever, I hope.
And
hi,
I
Dean.
Will tell you which ones will make you cry.
I know. That's the best part of you.
I haven't had any movies to make you cry lately.
Why is that? Why the lack of cryable movies?
Not sure.
Do you like crying during a movie? I enjoy it.
I enjoy a good cry.
Yep.
It cleanses your soul.
Yeah. Yep. It's a little embarrassing when you're in a small screening room with a bunch of critics.
That would be, yeah.
I don't remember what it was, but this is, you know, back in the day, and Roger Ebert is sitting right behind me, and I think Gene Siskel had passed away already, but, you know, it's like every heavy hitter movie critic is in this room. And, here comes, hi, guys, I'm Dean, like the new guy. And some movie comes out, and I'm like, oh, my God, don't make me start crying in front of Roger Ebert.
Oh, no.
Don't make me, but, you know.
Don't they cry, though?
I would hope.
You're supposed to get an emotional response out of a movie.
Yeah, I think they're too tough. They're too tough.
Too tough
I do.
To cry.
They're crying on the inside.
I think they're crying on the inside.
Dean, do you remember?
You know what? With Roger Ebert, he was too busy eating sandwiches.
I enjoyed a snack.
I'll say this really quickly. When they re-released Star Wars to the theater for the first time, my husband and I went, and right on the end next to us as the movie's starting, someone walks in late, and it's Roger Ebert sitting right next to us with his rice cakes and his bottled water.
Oh, yeah.
You're lucky if that's all it was.
Well, he fell asleep, and then some big explosion woke him up, and he walked away, came back with popcorn and a soda.
Was this in a movie theater or
yes,
in a little screening room?
This was like a special screening when Star Wars came. It wasn't a screening room. It was the AMC theaters, I think.
Because there's a small screening room that we see a lot of the movies. And not all of them. Sometimes we see them with full audiences. Sometimes I saw Magnificent Seven that's coming out in a couple of weeks, the new one. I saw that. I was the only one there.
It
was,
oh, wow.
You know, so really? Sometimes you never know. But I used to tease Roger because there used to be a sub sandwich place right in the lobby of this building where we saw the movies. And, you know, a lot of times you see 2-3 movies a day, so you got to, you know, grab some lunch somewhere in between. And Roger would get, I don't know what kind of sandwich it was, but I guarantee you there were onions on it every day. And I finally said, do you eat anything that doesn't have onions on it? Oh, can you smell it? It's like they can smell it down on Wacker Drive.
What do you remember, Dean, if there was a scene in a movie that made you cry more than any other scene ever? Do you remember? Because I know mine.
The one that, I don't know if it's the most, but the one that comes to my mind instantly is the scene in Terms of Endearment where Deborah Winger is saying goodbye to her two little boys.
That was sad.
I could start crying right now even talking about it. It was so sad.
Did you ever see a movie called In America?
I did.
Okay. I will not give this away, but there's a child in the movie who says something to the dad in the movie, and it came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I know.
And I couldn't, not only was I crying, I couldn't breathe.
Were you just like sobbing? Like,
When the movie was over, I had to put my head down because I saw it with Terry, and she said, you can't walk out of the theater looking this way. I was so...
His mascara was running.
I always wear kiss makeup to any movie I see.
Disguise, you know.
I like to dress like...
Is that Ace Frehley?
Why is Ace Frehley so sad during this movie? But, I mean, really, I was so caught up in the movie, and then this line happens. This kid says something to the dad, and it destroyed me.
That's such a good movie.
It is.
That is.
What's it called?
In America.
It's really
good. Any stars in it?
Stephen Rea, right?
Doesn't ring a bell.
And I'm trying to think of who else would be in it.
Is it a foreign film?
No.
No.
Might have been an English film. I can't remember now. But
I think they came over from Ireland, I think. Didn't they? I want to say
Ireland. It was a family that came over from Ireland. Yeah. And, like, they moved into...
A family of Irish immigrants adjust to life on the mean streets of Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah, in New York. They live in a crummy area. Jimon Hansu.
That
really was like his first
breakout role.
Big movie. But Samantha Morton was in the movie. Patty Considine.
It's a good cast.
Was in the movie. It's a really, really good movie.
And two real-life sisters, I believe, played the little girls in the movie. and they're both good, but boy, this one kid just says something, and you have to know the context of what was going on in the movie to understand this, but it just, it took my breath away. I was so sad, and
Most of my tears of watching movies really were generated from Roger's onions.
And sometimes,
now that I think of it,
sometimes Roger, because I would sit in on some of those screenings, and he'd have fondue going, and you shouldn't do that in a movie theater.
That's not right.
Dangerous.
No. That's not right. That hot oil, you know, can just get everywhere.
It's very dangerous.
People are walking in the aisles in the dark. It could be.
Dean, I can't bring this up every day, but this week has been a rough week with the loss of Gene Wilder.
Oh.
And I just want to bring you in on one aspect of this. Wendy and I were discussing him and his career and everything, and I said a lot of times with actors, as a new generation comes along, you find a new Cary Grant or you find a new Jack Lemmon or a John Wayne or somebody, but I can't think of anybody that picks up the mantle of Gene Wilder. Can you?
No. And, you know, really... His, you know, the bulk of his movie making stopped, 10-15 years ago.
Yeah,
he'd done his last on camera roles actually were a couple of recurring appearances that he made on Will and Grace, but that was it. He hasn't done a lot in a long time, and I cannot think of anybody who, you know, took that comedic mantle like he did. Yeah, I'm trying to think of it. I don't know. Robin Williams?
There's a like slight that, element. Sort of that, Wendy brought up Andy Kaufman, who is also gone. But there's some.
But they reminded me of, with a gentle soul and just kind of out there.
Yeah,
yeah, but not. Here's the part that I think sets Gene Wilder apart. And while he was very funny and had, you know, some great lines, many of which he wrote himself, not just words that somebody else wrote for him, but you know, often you could be watching Gene Wilder in a scene, and he would do nothing more than gaze his eyes from left to right that became so meaningful and so expressive or so hilarious. I can't think of too many actors who could do so much with so little, with so few words, so few physical, movement. That's the mark, I think, of somebody who's remarkable, like Gene Wilder was remarkable. Take a look at some of those roles. Take a look at, you know, his Willy Wonka. Many of the scenes are nothing more than him, you know, looking from here to there.
Yeah.
Just a look over that adds so much context. And especially if you haven't seen Willy Wonka since you're a kid, I beg you to rent this movie and to watch it as an adult. You will see this movie in a completely different way, seeing it as an adult. I hadn't seen it in a long, long, long time, and then watched it as an adult, and I felt like I was watching a new movie, that I got so much more out of everything that was happening. It wasn't just, you know, silly and whimsical anymore. It was really powerful and really very meaningful to me. So I think that's the power of Gene Wilder. Even in movies, you know, that are complete farces, like Young Frankenstein.
That is so funny.
I was writing his obits the other morning, and it's supposed to be sad. The man died, and I'm writing his obits, and I'm not supposed to be sitting at my desk laughing hysterically while I'm writing somebody's obituary, but that's what I was doing, watching these clips of Young Frankenstein.
Yeah,
really funny.
When it came up the other day, I said you'd be hard-pressed to find something that's a better satire or parody of anything. It was so direct and perfect. And we said about how they took a lot of the old sets from the Universal Frankenstein movies, and that's what you're seeing on the screen.
That's what was so great.
Attention to detail, and, yeah, it's just perfect.
It was so great. I had always heard that Fred Astaire was supposed to be up for the role of Willy Wonka.
Mm-hmm.
I had never heard that Peter Sellers was supposed to be up for the role of Willy Wonka, which
that's interesting.
Would have been amazing. That the guys from Monty Python all wanted to be Willy Wonka. Any one of them, any one of those would have been great. Although I think Fred Astaire might have been a little old for it at that time. Certainly, you know, could have done the dance moves, but. I seriously can't even imagine anybody else than Gene Wilder. I didn't mind Johnny Depp in the remake of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, but not anywhere the depth that Gene Wilder gave us in that movie.
Yeah, how
totally
about that?
Different.
Yep. Dean is our guest, and we're discussing movies. If you want to jump in, you can at 312-981-7200.
A guest
in our home. Would you like a limeade?
I should take my feet off the table.
Yeah, you should. What's
no,
with that?
No, go ahead. It's our home.
More in a moment. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We are talking to Gene, the dancing machine. Dean Richards.
One of my many nicknames in grade school. Deanie with the light brown hair was the most popular.
It says that in your yearbook. I've seen your yearbook.
It probably does.
Dean, before we get to this week's movie or movies, is this true or not true? I keep seeing opposing stories on this on the internet. There will or will not be more Harry Potter movies. Do you know?
They have not announced anything officially. The reason why it's a little ambiguous right now is because they're talking about it. Some of the stars have said, like Daniel Radcliffe, have said if something like that happens, he would be interested in participating in it. But they have not announced that there is going to be anything. That Warner Brothers has not made any official announcements. So.
I know it's a lot of money for everybody involved, especially the studio. Now, Radcliffe said a little while ago, unless he's updated this, that if he ever revisited the role, if he ever wanted to play Harry Potter again, he'd want to do it much later in life, like as an adult reflecting back on the childhood Harry Potter. But they want to get these new movies, I guess, done pretty quickly.
Yeah, I'm sure the Warner Brothers would like to do them. I mean, they were tremendously profitable for them. But there's nothing official on any of that right at the moment.
Have you been to the Universal Studios in Orlando?
I have not to see the new stuff. I haven't been there in quite a long time.
They're Harry Potter. They have two different theme parked parts of Harry Potter's world, and it's phenomenal.
Oh, you've been?
Yeah.
I have not seen one Harry Potter movie ever.
Oh, you haven't?
What?
I know.
Really?
Yeah.
Communist.
Julie Andrews. Communist.
Jeez. I'm going to build a wall around you.
There's ahead. A McCarthy on the line. He wants to talk to you. Wendy,
wait,
he wants
behind.
To talk to you right now. What about this movie, The Hollers? What do we know about this movie?
I know that I love it.
Yeah?
That's what I know. And I know that it's the directorial debut of John Krasinski, mm-hmm. who we know, and I think most people loved, as Jim on The Office.
He was awesome.
It's like super nice guy as well. Couldn't be a nicer guy. And took a shot at directing a film. It's a quirky little family dramedy, I guess I would call it, because it's parts of it are quite serious. It's a story about a family in Ohio that the mother, who's played by the great Margot Martindale, develops a brain tumor and has to have a brain tumor taken out. The father is the great Richard Jenkins. Just these two all by themselves, to me, make this movie. If there was nothing else except scenes with Margot Martindale and Richard Jenkins, this movie would be absolutely superb. But you add in the dynamics of John Krasinski and his brother in the movie, and it's a very dysfunctional kind of family, working out lots of different problems at this time when the mother is about to have a brain tumor. And, you know, if anyone's ever gone through these kinds of family traumas, I mean, often these kinds of, you know, family quirks and dysfunctions and things that you never say anything about in these moments of anxiety, these are the things that, begin to come out when, tension's that high. And that's kind of what happens. I mean, this family is facing all of their flaws. But at the same time, the story is written pretty brilliantly at the same time where it's not uncomfortable to watch. It's actually at times they have written in plenty of comedic comfort in this film that in all of the dysfunction in this family, you get some laughs and you get some relief. And I for one can certainly say that I saw lots of things from my own family.
Oh, good.
In this kind of storyline. It's really well acted. I think Krasinski did a really nice, discretion-filled job of directing this film. I think he very wisely realized that he had a terrific ensemble and got out of their way. Didn't try to show that he's the hotshot director here. And when you've got amazing actors like he does in his movie, Alison Seeger is in the film and one of the actors in the film. They get out of the way and let the performers do their jobs. Anna Kendrick is in the film, and Randall Park and Charlto Copley. Do you know who that is?
No, who is that?
He's a South African actor. You've seen him in other films, probably most notably in was it called District 9? Yeah, District 9.
Oh yeah,
9.
Sure.
District
Science
9.
Fiction.
Yeah, he was in District 9. He was in the remake of the A-Team. He's been in a lot of films, and you'll certainly recognize him. But he's great. He's the one of the dysfunctional brothers in this movie as well. I can't recommend this enough. I think it's a really sweet and thoughtful and at times really funny movie. Charlie Day is in this movie.
I forgot to mention Charlie Day.
Yeah, always. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
And Josh Groban.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. My gosh. How did I forget that?
And yeah. Bill will want to see it because Mary Kay Place is in it.
I do enjoy Mary Kay Place.
Small role, but a good one. But Charlie Day plays a hospital attendant who is hilarious in the movie. Josh Groban is a pastor. I'm watching the movie and I'm going, wait a minute, I recognize that guy. Who is that guy? And it took me a couple of minutes to realize, oh my gosh, that's Josh Groban.
He's actually a pretty good actor. He's done a couple things and I've liked him.
I hate to admit I like him.
Yeah, he's very likable.
He is extremely likable in this movie. It's just really one great performance after another. There are a couple of smaller films, a couple of sci-fi movies that are opening this weekend that they didn't screen. So if you're looking for something brand new, you cannot go wrong with this movie. It's a really good one.
Dean's and, List on it?
Oh, Dean's List B+.
Oh, good.
The Hollars, Hollars.
That's their last name.
Yep. Excellent.
That's their last
Perfect.
Name.
I want to see that.
Dean, thanks so much. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
I'll be crying at you later.
All right. That's the very sad Dean Richards. We'll take a quick break and find out what Steve has on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
You seem agitated. Not you, Kim. Bill.
Who, me?
Yeah, I mean, you're just
I don't have it in me.
John Lovitz won't play tennis with you, and then all of
that
a sudden
is upsetting.
You've been kind of in a mood.
It's upsetting. Have you ever had any of your dreams dashed by a former member of Saturday Night Live? Come on, ever? Has Amy Poehler ever promised to take you on a walk and then at the last minute canceled?
No.
No?
I'd be upset.
That's what I'm going through right now with John Lovitz. He lied to me. All right. Earlier in the show, we were talking about how Donald Trump went to Mexico yesterday. Not for vacation. He met with President Peña Nieto, who is the president of Mexico.
Nicely done.
And then, thank you. And then they had a joint press conference where Donald Trump was, I think you even said, very presidential.
The first time in my life, I thought, you know what? He's acting presidential at this moment.
He was reeling you in. He threw out his fishing line, and then he started reeling you in.
I was like a largemouth bass.
Right. The topic came up about the wall that he's been saying for several months. What he's going to do is he's going to put a wall between the U.S. and Mexico. So they asked him at the post-press conference, well, how about that wall? Did you guys talk about that? And he said, we did talk about the wall, but we didn't discuss who was going to pay for it.
Because it was just a preliminary meeting.
Right.
Just go, you know, we didn't get into it.
But then later, when he came back to the United States, the president of Mexico said that they did not only talk about the wall, but they also discussed who would pay for it. And he said, and I told him, we're not going to pay for it. And then Donald Trump said some disparaging things about him. It got a little out of hand.
And then he basically, Donald Trump reiterated in a different type of tone, a non-presidential tone,
mm-hmm.
when he was back in Phoenix,
mm-hmm.
saying, we are going to have that wall, people go crazy, and Mexico is going to pay for it.
Right.
And everyone goes more crazy.
Right. As we've seen happen many times in the past. Also, Trump was very hung up on how much time they spent together. He mentioned several times that they spent a good long time, and then I don't remember how it came up, but he said it must have been an hour, almost an hour, nearly an hour, which isn't real. I mean, I could talk to you about candy for an hour.
Exactly.
An hour is
not
a big
long.
That's not a big long time. Anyway.
But it's his friend.
Right. That's what he said, that he wants to call President Peña Nieto his friend. Whenever we talk about Donald Trump, we get a lot of texts and phone calls from people who agree, and then just as many from people who disagree and say, hey, you rip on Trump, but you don't rip on Hillary Clinton. Why aren't you ripping on Hillary Clinton? She lied. She killed people. She's always deleting her email.
Just now, Bill. Come on. This station has been discussing Donald Trump press for almost 24 hours. Let it go. First of all, it was in the news.
Yeah.
Second of all, Hillary talk.
Yeah. Here it is. You brought this up, and it is true. There is a new survey out.
Survey says
in no uncertain terms that Hillary Clinton is now disliked by a record number of Americans. I'll read you the specifics of this. While bombastic Republican nominee Donald Trump remains the most unpopular major party presidential nominee in modern U.S. history, Hillary Clinton is not faring much better. A new poll found that she is currently the most disliked that she has ever been in her 25 years of public life. Just 41% of Americans have a favorable view of the Democratic presidential nominee. This according to the Washington Post. ABC News polls released on Wednesday these results. It also found that 56% have an unfavorable view of her, a record high for the poll. That's a sharp decline from 3 years ago when Americans had a record favorable view of Hillary Clinton. At that point, 3 years ago, she was polling in at 67%.
That's because she wasn't sitting there poised to be our next president.
Yeah. I know she wanted to.
But it's like 3 years ago, people liked her. Now that she may be our next president,
right?
People are going, maybe not so much.
But what does this say when, and I'm not the first person to bring this up by far, when the two people who are the front runners, very likely either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump will be our next president. And when the polling numbers are that low, when you're hitting that many people not liking either of them. And I mean, like I said, so many people say, hey, our hands are tied. There's no good choice here. But that's abysmally low. That's frighteningly low. You would almost think, just by the nature of the numbers of the country, you would think it would be, let's say, worst case scenario, half the country doesn't like you. Because if we're dividing it Republicans versus Democrats, and I know there's other parties, I know there's other parties existing. But if you just said, just round it off, the worst you could probably do would be half the country not liking you. But this is way, way, way more.
This is the first time I really have not decided.
You still don't know who you'd vote for if the election was today?
I have a good idea. If the election was today, I know who I would vote for, but I keep waiting for something to happen.
Yeah.
Like maybe somebody new is going to come up, which I know it won't, and it's too late. I don't know why I just am not. Let me put it this way. This is the first time that I've voted that I'm not 100% sure of my vote.
I don't think you're alone in that.
First time ever in my voting career.
But forever you have heard how the presidential election has become what is the least of two evils?
The lesser of two evils, yeah.
Right. So this presidential election seems like that should be the theme of the whole election.
I've never even really felt that before. I know a lot of people have, but this time I am feeling the lesser of two evils.
Have you ever had a scenario where you liked both candidates?
Yes.
Have you?
I kind of like John McCain.
I did too.
And until he chose a running mate, and then I was out.
That changed it?
Uh-huh.
That's the first one that comes to mind was the first Obama election, and his running mate was John McCain. That was the first one that I went, I kind of like both of these guys. Yeah.
I really felt like, you know what? I could be good whoever won this.
Yeah. Yeah. Without a doubt. The survey also found that Clinton's favorability dropped significantly among groups of Americans who have been supportive of the candidate, and that includes women, that includes Hispanics, that includes liberals. So her numbers have dipped dramatically.
Well, if you think of it, there's not been a positive message in this campaign. I mean,
none.
Anything that's in the news or anything that's anywhere, it's been negative. There's not been sort any affirmation of policy or I want... And it's not that, you know, the candidates aren't saying it. I mean, I think she's saying it more than him because he's saying his point is that things are so bad you need me to fix it.
Right.
Which is fine. That's just his argument. So, but everything has been about how bad these two are. And so it shouldn't be a big shock that that reflects itself in the polls.
But, Steve, didn't you think coming off of there was an energy with the Democratic convention? There was an energy with both conventions. But I thought that the theme that they tended to play up on the Democratic side.
We're stronger together.
Right. Stronger together. Let's build bridges, not walls. I thought whoever was behind that, that needed to be the push.
But let's think about what came. Oh, you're right. I agree with you. But think of what came next. Now, after I can remember Bill Clinton's convention in, 92, he and Al Gore got on a bus and they, you know, they're playing Fleetwood Mac songs.
Oh,
and
right.
It's right there. Everyone's loving each other off on the bus. And I think Clinton and Kane maybe tried to do that. But what was the story that came out of the convention? It was the Kahn family.
Yeah, right.
Right? Which was a big story.
Right.
But it was a negative story. It was, you know, so it started pushing things down
again. The
Gold Star
family.
Right, the Gold Star family who went after Donald Trump.
Right.
So that's kind of my point. We haven't had these moments of, you know,
positivity.
Kumbaya, I'm going to lift you up and all of that.
Yeah.
It just has all been negative. So, you know, first of all, they are both unpopular.
Yeah.
But we shouldn't be surprised that they're becoming more unpopular given the tone of the campaign.
But now what if this continues, and I don't know why it wouldn't, over the next couple months what you're going to see is some very savage debates, I think, don't you?
I can't wait for them, to be honest with you.
But everybody who says that, when I've asked other people who say that, and I'm anxious to see them too, but when if I say to you, why are you anxious to see it? What do you want to see in those debates?
I want to see who I'm going to vote for. I want to see it's push has come to shove.
Yeah.
I want to watch it and base my decision. And I hope Gary Johnson's able to be in on that debate as well.
Yeah.
Because I think people are just really going... And listen, I want a woman president, but I don't want a woman president just because she's a woman.
Right. You want more substance behind it. But don't you think that the majority of the people who can't wait for the debates, they're looking at it as more of a wrestling match than they are a political debate? It's going to be, it is. It's going to be, it's
well,
going to be
that
brutal.
That goes without saying, yeah. It is going to be, I mean.
Well, I don't know that it will. I mean, maybe it will be. The way I see it, the Clinton people are hoping that it's going to be a very substantive debate where she can show her chops on that and
sure.
he can't.
That's right. What I'm hoping.
Right. And that won't be sort of a wrestling match. So I don't know. I don't know if it will serve, if you're Donald Trump's people, if it will serve him to, you know, call her lying Hillary and all that stuff at that event. So I think you might see both sides being a little more substantive there.
I wonder.
Sure hope so.
Yeah.
I mean, just this name calling, honestly, like this is what goes on in the playground of a K through 8 school.
I know. It's hard to fathom that those are our candidates. All right, more on this and other topics. We'd love to hear from you. We're at 312-981-7200. Call us or text us there. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. We're talking about a survey that the results were just made public in which, seriously, both candidates poured very poorly. The focus of the survey is mostly on Hillary Clinton, but even they say that Donald Trump himself is right now the more unpopular of the two, polling with lower numbers than Hillary Clinton. But they're amazed at how within a 3-year span, her not just approval rating, but just rating of people who just out and out believe in her, like her, support her, want to vote for her, want her to be the president, has declined dramatically. It was 67% 3 years ago at about this time. And right now it's somewhere around 41%. That's a significant dip, especially for somebody whose odds-on favorite to be the next president of the United States.
I don't really put a lot of faith in polls either.
No?
I really don't. And sometimes I feel like they shouldn't even reveal what polls say because that might sway someone.
I'm sure it does. I'm positive
like,
it does.
Like, oh, my guy or girl doesn't have a chance.
The funniest, or well, I shouldn't say funniest, maybe most alarming part is the part I just told you a little while ago, that within certain breakdown groups, like women, like Hispanics, like liberals, which are her core, that's her base.
Yeah,
the numbers are dwindling just as almost as rapidly, I should say, in those core groups, and that's I'm sure to them that's almost catastrophic, with the election so close. You know, because you want to say, at least we're still running good with the people who believed in us all along, women, Hispanics, liberals. Not according to this poll.
Again, I want a woman president, and I wish it was a fresh woman.
Who comes to mind? Is there somebody who comes to mind?
No, but just, I'm really tired of Bushes and Clintons.
Mm-hmm.
630 has texted us, and this, I'm sure, will relate to a lot of people out there. So sad that this is the first election for my 18-year-old. Worried that these young people might think that this is the norm. We as parents are working hard to let her know that this is a great country, worthy of better than this circus. If this is your first election, this is really something.
Yeah. Although I have to say, with both of my kids, they're extremely excited, and this is their first time they get to vote. Yeah, they're 19, so this is their first election. And I'm so proud of how much attention they paid and have paid for months. We watched both conventions, the Republican and the Democratic. They sat by me. They asked questions. They had insights that I was very proud of. I was trying to remember not that I didn't care as much at the age of 18 or 19, but I didn't invest as much time in it as either of them have. So I'm really proud of how much they really care, and they're both excited.
It's an exciting time. And I think back to when I first voted.
Yeah.
You kind of go with what you've been brought up to believe. That's usually, you know, I'm just going to vote like my family votes.
Sure.
And then kids today are not just doing that.
Right.
But we did.
Right.
And I just know that a lot of young people were crazy. They felt the burn, Bill. So I don't know what they're going to do now with no Bernie Sanders in it.
So many of both of my daughter's friends were gigantic supporters of Bernie Sanders.
I know.
They really are. And then...
So what do they do? I'm just curious.
Nearly all of them have switched to Hillary Clinton. It's kind of... I'm trying to think if there's any one of their friends who is switching from Bernie Sanders to Donald Trump. Nobody comes to mind right away. I'm sure there's one or two, but it was just, they were all very upset. And it's really weird, because on paper, if you look at Bernie Sanders, you would say, that's not the guy that would reach that.
Yeah.
Would reach that level of popularity with those kids in their late teens and early 20s. I would think the least likely to have that. I mean, unless you really dig deep and find out why, you know, they all like the idea of free school. They love that idea.
Sure, sounds great.
But then I said to one of my daughters, I said, but realistically, school is free to you. We're the parents are paying for it primarily, you know, so you're going to get free school, whether it's out of my pocket or out of the government's pocket.
Yeah, but a lot of kids have to pay for it themselves.
Some
so they're
do.
Thinking,
yeah,
wow,
do.
If it's free, and then they don't have the guilt that they owe their parents forever.
Yeah, yeah. But you could put that under the list of, I hate to
lies.
Be so severe, pipe dreams.
That
even though that was one of the things he was running on, realistically, like the wall, that wasn't going to happen.
Well, and it wasn't going to be a thing where you could pick a school, any school you wanted to go to, and
right.
go for
right.
free. It was going to, you know.
But they didn't think that through, really.
Right.
You hear free college, that's what you
sounds
think.
Sounds good, doesn't it? It sounds great.
And then if you're so for feeling the burn and Bernie's out of it, you almost don't want to vote for Hillary because it's like, oh, she took him down. It should have been him.
Right.
So it's a weird world. This is not your typical election.
Do you know what Kylie said? She said, remember how last year when the Mets beat the Cubs and then you didn't want the Mets to win because they ruined it for the Cubs? And I go, I do remember that. She goes, I think that's the way a lot of my friends feel about Hillary Clinton. They don't want to switch to the other side because that's the girl who took down our guy. You know?
Yeah.
So that I was
thinking along the line of the Blackhawks. But
oh, yeah.
It's the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's like they took down your person. So
why should they have any win out of this?
When really it should be whether or not you want Dave Ross or, you know, Wilson Contreras catching for your team.
Right.
And
that's more realistic.
One of the others, you're still a Cub fan. I mean, if you're on that team, you stay with that team.
Right.
That's true.
Right. And then there's all the Miguel Montero supporters, Steve. You can't leave them out either.
He'll never get 15%.
I don't think
polls.
He will.
I don't think so
either.
Who would have thought that Bean Walker would be the voice of reason?
He
that's
is,
all
though.
I got to say.
He always is. All right. We need to take a quick break.
No, we don't.
We don't need to take a quick break.
We don't. We have to go right to news.
Oh, All right.
Are you ready a little early?
No, or? I'm not. I don't like the terminology when you say have to, because
we want to.
Thank you very much, Bill.
We
appreciate
want to.
That.
Well,
that
no, we have to. We have, you know, Kevin is telling us what to do, and if you're not ready, then
you notice every time something goes wrong with the show, you blame Kevin.
Thank you, Steve.
Not every time, but yeah, I guess every time.
Well, and how many times are those every times is he responsible?
Some of the
listen.
Yeah. I know you're getting married. I know your head's in your wedding.
Get your head out of your wedding.
Where are your priorities, Kevin?
I mean, seriously,
what's going wrong?
Nothing's going wrong, but you know. You.
But it's not his fault that there's not a break right now.
Right.
No, I didn't do that. I didn't blame him. No, I said he's telling us no break. I'm taking my orders from Kevin. Although when I walked in today, what did he say? Only 15 more days to work.
Right.
Yeah, in this month, I only have 15 days left. Yeah.
We don't want to hear that. Well, we want to say, God, I wish I could work all month with you guys, but I can't because I'm getting married.
But you've both already had your vacations this year. I haven't.
Yeah, well, let me tell you something. It's not a vacation, pal. You're getting married.
Oh, my gosh.
Sobering words. Very sobering words.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And I have some scary news that I'd like to share with people.
All right.
I don't remember the last time I had a hickey. Do you? When's the last time you had one?
Or?
No, you.
Oh, me?
From someone else.
From someone else. It's been forever.
Did you ever practice giving yourself a hickey on your arm? So when So when the real moment arrived, you'd make a nice-looking hickey?
No. No, there was no arm making outs at my school. That's the one thing they forbid.
I mean, by yourself.
Mm-mm. Perv. Not
you,
me.
I practiced to make sure.
Oh, no.
I still see hickeys on people, usually some young kids working at fast food restaurants.
Yeah. And what is the good in that? Remind me what the good is. I'm trying to remember. Just to say that you're getting some action. Is that what it is?
Well, it was. What's first of all, it felt good.
Yeah, but you would know like when to stop, wouldn't you? Like I always knew when to stop.
Yeah, but then you're like marking your territory.
Is that what it is? It's
I guess.
Marking your territory. All right.
I see it a lot with younger kids working at fast food establishments.
Yeah, but maybe they burn themselves on the fryer.
What are they picking up the fry basket with their neck?
Yeah, some of them do. Yeah.
You never practiced on your hand or your arm to make sure
That's
your hickey
sick.
Was a nice-looking hickey and not like a big, gross, ugly one?
So you would be, paint this picture for me, you would just be by yourself at home.
Maybe.
Making out with your arm.
I wasn't making out with it. All you do is, you know, suck
on your
skin.
Arm.
Well, just show us.
Yeah, slowly.
Take your time.
I'm doing it right now.
We know you are.
Don't put this on the internet.
That's a cute little hickey.
I guess.
You know what I'm talking about, though, where you'll see a girl who, like her whole neck.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny because you liked the hickey and then you'd get home and you'd realize, my parents might see this hickey. So all of a sudden you'd wear a turtleneck and it'd be summer.
Right.
Or everyone tells you to take a comb and comb it.
Oh, I'm not
familiar
with it.
To spread the blood out.
Is that true? Does that work?
You know how many times I combed my neck and it never really worked. Turtlenecks worked better.
I guess, yeah.
Well, dangerous news for hickey lovers.
A.K.A. pervs.
How is that
perverted? Attention all pervs. You would just stay at home and suck on your arm? That sounds weird to me.
Well, I didn't do it every day.
And she never said she stayed at home and did it.
Oh, all right. If you're traveling and doing it.
You could do it anywhere. You could do it in a classroom.
In a car. At a stoplight?
You just, you know, if you were going to maybe give a hickey as opposed to getting one, you wanted it to look, I'm a little
you wanted it to look
type
what?
A personality. I want, you know, I'm very artistic. If I have great printing, if a letter's off, I'll erase it and fix it. So I wanted my hickey to be something to write home
you're
about.
Artistic.
So you're being called on in sixth grade algebra and you're like... Right. Miss Snyder.
Right. What were you doing? Eating paste still?
Well, if it was around.
All right. Well, there's bad news for hickey lovers.
That would be you.
No, I've outgrown the hickey.
I hope so.
You never had a hickey?
What's the oldest person? Like, what's the cutoff age-wise? I'd hate to see like a really old guy or an old woman with one. That would be.
I'll come in with one tomorrow just to show you.
All right.
When's the last time you had a? Did you ever have one?
I don't think so.
By the way, when Bill just said all right, he didn't mean it. So please don't come in.
No, don't do
Steve,
it.
Steve, you ever had a hickey in your teenage or high school years?
Yeah, I had a teacher named Pat Hickey.
Oh, you did?
Oh, world just, history.
You know, no one.
No, it's true. I did.
No one's being honest.
I'm being honest. I don't like. I only dated girls that knew when to say when in that department. Like anything that left a mark, like we would have a safe word, and our safe word was your name. I would say,
Wendy.
Yeah.
That is hurtful and hateful,
honey. That's going to leave a mark,
right?
You would stop a girl in the.
No, we had the wherewithal to say this could potentially be damaging to somebody's reputation in
really?
The heat of passion.
Then you were thinking way ahead as a teenager.
I guess.
He skipped kindergarten and is ambidextrous. Right. That makes him smarter. So you're not going to answer, Steve, whether or not you had a hickey.
Without a hickey? I don't recall that I did.
That's
a little stumble.
I don't think you wore it as a badge of honor. Like for...
No, it just was. That's what you did. I think they're stupid now when I think about it. But yeah. At the time, whatever.
Who led the league in your school? Could you?
I don't know. I'm not.
You don't have to give a
names.
Last name, but is there a first name you can
Wendy?
Give us? Hey, Kev, you owe me $50.
Well, wait, are you counting exterior and interior?
No.
Like self-inflicted?
Don't.
And...
People are having lunch.
That's not gross.
I guess. All right.
You mean sucking someone's skin until the blood shows?
Yeah, why would that be gross? That's not gross. That's why you like Walking Dead so much. You think
you
they're giving each other hickeys.
Fun in bed. That's all I can say.
Veronica.
Oh, my God. You left a mark.
That's going to leave a mark.
Yes.
All right, Kevin, I'm not asking you. You've had a hickey, haven't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you for being honest.
I mean, yeah. What do I got
it
to
happens.
Hide? Sorry, Mom.
I mean, yeah. I mean,
sure.
My mom saw him. She would wag her finger at me, and I'd keep combing it, trying to make sure it would go away.
Oh, get to the weird part.
I had one before a family party once, okay. And it was real bad.
Kevin.
I was like cricking my neck to try and hide it the entire time. My mom was like, "What's wrong with your neck? Are you okay?" I didn't get caught though.
Yeah, you don't think you did, Kevin? They all got.
They
caught.
Knew.
Yeah.
All right, here's another thing that I forgot about. Thank you, 847, for bailing me out. You would also freeze a spoon. You'd like make a spoon really cold, and then you'd rub the spoon on it.
What's that supposed to
How
do?
How would that
it's
work?
It's supposed to break up the blood clotting that's going on there.
See, I don't look at blood clots as being all that much of a turn-on.
It's like a bruise. It's an abrasion.
Is that exciting, though?
When it's happening, yes.
The cold spoon, are we talking about being
no.
exciting?
No, the
hickey itself, whatever.
All right.
I just want to put the warning out there like I've tried to do for 10 minutes to
Go
any
ahead.
Hickey lovers out there.
Go on.
You could have read this to yourself and taken care of that, but go ahead.
All right, you laugh about it.
You could have sucked on your arm and read this to yourself in one fell swoop.
The injured and cure all in once. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
A hickey turned out to be the kiss of death for a 17-year-old boy in Mexico City. I'm just putting a warning out there. Learn from my mistakes, will you?
Please don't tell me a kid died from this, please.
Well, that's what they're saying.
Oh,
I
no.
know, it seems impossible. Julio Macias Gonzalez suffered a stroke that doctors reportedly think was caused by a hickey from his 24-year-old girlfriend. Now,
How
my
old
first
is he?
Thing. Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
He is 17, she's 24.
Wow.
It should be the other way around. A 24-year-old should know better that...
I think so, too.
Hickeys are a teenager thing.
Yep.
According to news reports, this is from Huffington Post, the teen had convulsions during a family dinner and then died.
Oh, no.
The woman's skin sucking could have created the blood clot that traveled to Julio's brain and led to the stroke. This according to HoyaEstado.com. His girlfriend, who has not been publicly identified, is reportedly in hiding.
I don't blame her.
She wasn't trying to kill him.
No, she wasn't, but look at the end result. Ugh.
If she knew, she would have released.
Yeah.
Sources
Catch
told,
and release, Wendy.
Sources told HoyaEstado.com that Julio's parents were already upset over the relationship due to the age difference.
Well, this isn't going to win him over. this is not, there's no way they're going to go, okay, now. now we're on your side. But before, we thought the age disparity was too much.
Disparity?
Yeah. But this is the worst possible
I'm
result.
I'm just putting it out there because I want to warn people. Hickey's,
it should be on every school's bulletin board, this story. And you should do a presentation. You should go from school to school and say,
kids, this is what a hickey looks like.
Right.
You can be like one of those meth billboards.
Right. Right.
It's so fun when you guys team up on me.
This is your arm on suck. That should be your... That could be your
you just broke Bertrand.
Still hurts a little.
Hickeys usually just cause blemishes to the skin.
Usually.
This is a serious story.
I know. This is awful. This is terrible.
Clowns?
No, it's not fair because you brought this up before we knew that it
right.
involved
Right, we didn't know he died.
Tragedy.
That's what I like to do, actually.
This isn't good.
But I'm just honestly putting a warning out there. Hickeys usually just cause blemishes to the skin and occasionally the reputation.
Yeah.
But there have been no reports of more serious physical damage from a hickey.
Oh, man.
In 2010, the New Zealand Medical Journal wrote up the case of a 44-year-old woman who was rushed to the hospital after losing movement in her arm under mysterious circumstances. At first, doctors couldn't figure out why the woman was having a stroke.
Yeah.
Eventually, they noticed a bruise on her neck and figured out that the suction on a major artery created a blood clot that caused a minor stroke.
That makes sense.
The woman did
it?
Survive.
She lived, oh yeah.
I'm just putting a warning out there. I know kids are in school right now, teenagers, but seriously.
I hope that their teachers will turn this broadcast on and save some lives. That's my hope. I know they're busy learning important things like science and math, but you're saving lives is what you're doing.
I'm just trying to help because if a teacher says don't get a hickey, kids right. aren't going to listen.
Right, until this.
So I still think I like the idea of the billboard campaign.
Consider it, Wendy.
Right,
it would
come
be,
on.
What is it again?
This is your arm on suck. It's like a parody. Well, it's not a parody. It's a tribute to This Is Your Brain on Drugs.
You know, in the meth at billboards where they show someone with the meth face sort
yes.
of thing. And you could have like the meth, or, I mean, the yes. Hickey forearm or thigh, whatever you choose.
Whatever,
it's
up to you.
I can't reach my thigh. I guess
someone
the top
else would
part
do
it. Of it.
Well, the idea is someone else would give you the hickey, Wendy, but
right.
they don't.
You can get them from other people. It doesn't have to be self-imposed. It's actually better if it's from somebody else.
I did. I just wanted. You don't get even where I'm coming from, and Bertrand's like, done for the day. Good God!
I couldn't possibly reach that.
Did you play Twister by yourself?
No, I only did it so my hickeys would look good.
You're right. A giver,
right?
I am. I didn't
and
want
a
somebody...
receiver. You're
go.
A do-it-yourselfer.
I'm going home.
All right. More after this, we think. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
You proud of yourself?
We found this rare tape from your high school locker.
Listen, I wasn't the only one in high school who had a hickey. I didn't give them all the time. I had one boyfriend in high school.
Right.
That's it.
Right. When you say 82. You didn't give them all the time, could you elaborate on that? What does that mean? What was the breakdown?
It would happen occasionally.
With how much frequency would you say?
I don't know. I didn't keep track.
Right. Just curious.
We're thinking you did.
And somebody, you know, I mentioned that, first of all, there's terrible news. Hickey turned out to be a kiss of death for a 17-year-old boy in
the
Mexico City. They are thinking that the skin sucking could have created a blood clot that traveled to this 17-year-old's brain and led to a stroke.
What are the odds of that? That's like a billion to one. That's terrible.
Right. And then I get cupping done, too, which is the adult version of a hickey, which makes me think that's probably not a good thing either. But one's on the neck, one's on the back. I don't know.
And it's a different technique to cause this.
Well,
what?
One's sexual, one's not.
One is sexual and one is
one
not.
One feels good when it's happening. Well, cupping kind of feels
that's
good,
what,
too.
Yeah, see what
it's
I
like
mean?
It's a deep tissue massage.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, Sheila, they're acting like they've never given or received a hickey.
I know, I don't understand. Okay, so, hickeys are totally like a teenager thing. I work at Walmart right now. I'm in my 30s, but like a bunch of the kids, you know, 17, 18, 19-year-olds constantly have marks on their necks. I just roll my eyes at that.
And I do too. It's not like I still partake, but in your teenage years, you know, they were around.
Right. Were you on the hickey team at your high school? Were in the yearbook? Like, did they?
You never. You never gave a hickey to a girl.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
I don't think so, Sheila. He doesn't even know if he did it.
Wow.
Do you tell the kids at Walmart? Because that's I see these young kids today, and I look at them. I'm like, been there, done that. Don't you? Don't they try? No, but don't they try and cover it up with makeup or anything?
No, I think.
Oh, your phone is breaking up, Sheila. Thank you for calling.
The government does not want her to divulge her answers. I don't blame them.
815 says that Bill and Steve are mean. Wendy asked them how many hickeys they gave.
Steve, I can't speak for you. I'm almost positive never gave, never received. I knew when to say when. I knew.
That's your problem, Bill. Sometimes you got to learn how to let go.
I knew when to say when.
Sharon Moonstruck had love bites.
Oh, yeah, she did, didn't she?
Those are hickeys.
Yeah, well, kind of, I guess. I'm trying to remember what television show I watched a week or so ago where one of the characters had one, and I went, that seems older and out of place than I'm used to. You know, usually I would put them in like the high school years, and it would end there.
That's what I'm talking about.
But it doesn't go, it shouldn't go much into your 20s, 30s, 40s, and beyond, should it?
No. And I.
So I think the distinction is whether they're done on purpose or whether it was an accidental
mark. You sound like you were doing yours on purpose.
I got news for you. Everyone who's given a hickey wanted to leave
a
mark.
It's on purpose? Yeah.
Yeah.
So who's getting something out of that? Like, is it just, is it a kid's
way of... I don't know.
Why
don't you come watch next time one's being
happened? I don't want to see it. That's my point. But isn't that your way of saying, hey, look, I'm getting some action? Isn't that kind of what it is?
It's, I don't know. I know what it was in high
school. What else could it be? What else would it be?
You know, not you're getting action, but it's like... they're hooked up with somebody.
Okay,
it's like sometimes you would give a ring to somebody in the 50s when you were going steady. This might have been something different.
I think it's just, you know how when people go skiing at Wilmot Mountain and they leave their ski tag on their
that's
jacket
kinda what it was.
For 6 weeks to
I
say,
never skied, so I didn't have that, and I was jealous. I wanted to take people's ski jackets and go, are you using those? I would go to a Goodwill to see if I could find a jacket with those things.
With the ski tag?
It was like a status symbol.
Yeah.
I never went skiing, so I didn't have those tags.
All right.
So I went the hickey route.
You had different tags.
331, Wendy, we didn't call girls who gave hickeys artistic. We called them something else. I'm not proud of it. I'm just saying that.
Are you sure you're not?
Come on.
No, I'm. You All guys? Right. No. Right. It's something in high school, and yeah, I practiced on my arm to make sure it wasn't a big blotchy one.
That's... Did you get pretty good?
Yes.
Did you tutor other students? You can take that any way you want.
I would have thought
any
about it.
Like.
I would have been rich right now.
All right.
Hey, Teresa.
Hey, I just wanted to tell you guys, I went to school with a girl that had a bow tie made out of hickeys on her neck.
God.
What is her name?
Wow.
I would like
What's
to
her number?
Her name was Cherry.
Oh, no,
that
don't.
Explains
was it really?
Yes, I swear to God. Wow. Her name was Cherry, and it looked like a giant bow tie. It was all the way around her neck.
That's a good look.
Wow, I didn't
even
think of that.
I'm just wondering what that girl's doing now.
Cherry. They named a magazine after her, I think.
I think they did.
Teresa, thank you. It just happened. It was part of growing up in my school, whatever.
Yeah.
Hi, Nick.
Hey, Wendy, how you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I just want to tell you that I was a player, went in the 60s. I had a lot of girls, and any girl I didn't respect, and we were hot and heavy, I gave her a hickey.
How about that?
The ones you didn't respect?
The ones I didn't respect, and there was a lot of them. I gave them hickeys. The ones I respected wouldn't let me give them a hickey, and I didn't want to give them a hickey out of respect. So I wouldn't go around bragging about
I am not bragging. Why is every man listening to this as bragging?
Because guys like me would call you easy.
Like guys like Nick.
Because I had a lot of them.
Now,
Nick,
Nick, you realize right now you're not making yourself sound very good, right?
Well, I just happen to be a good-looking stud.
Oh, my God. That makes yourself sound better. Thank you, Nick.
By the way, that's 2 days in a row we've had on characters from Tony and Tina's wedding on the show.
I, I mean, you guys act like this is foreign. What are you laughing about, Dave?
You guys have delivered one of the best afternoon hours I've heard.
Oh, thanks,
in a
Dave.
Long time. Thank you so much. And Jeff, I think you're better off to head over to the. I'm sorry. I've got 10,000 things going through my head. You're better off to take the Tony and Tina's wedding in the bathroom handing out mints. But the whole thing you guys are talking about, it was and always will be a point of territory marking.
Like
period.
He's taken.
It is, isn't it?
I said that. Yeah. Do you guys hear words coming out of my mouth?
But it's part territorial, but it's also part bragging, isn't it? Yes. It is.
Yes. Yeah. It's bragging on the girl's part that she's got somebody that has done it to her,
right.
Or the other way around for the guy. And the other part is territorial. You know, it's like you see it, and it's like, oh, okay, they're taken.
Right.
Move on to the next one. You know, what are we going to do now?
What are you going to do, give them your school ring? They don't do that anymore. Right. Thank you, Dave. I appreciate it. All right, this is something we need to hear. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I'm with you, Wendy. I'm over 80, and I've had a lot of hickeys.
God love you.
I didn't think I'd hear that phrase today.
Anyhow, my story is a friend of ours was trying to amuse his baby. Baby's sitting in the high chair crying. So our friend takes the suction toy off of the tray of the high chair.
Right.
And puts it on his forehead and waggles his head back and forth.
Wow.
And the baby loved it, so he kept it on a long time. He had this huge hickey.
Oh,
he had to be over a month, right on his forehead.
Oh, that's not good. Is that good?
Well, it was for a good story, at least.
Yeah,
he was trying to entertain his baby.
All
right. Yeah, right. But I love you guys. Thanks.
Thank you,
Mary. You have made our day.
Okay. Thank you, bye.
Mary?
Oh, wait. Mary, you still there?
Yes.
Steve Bertrand wants to ask you out.
I just want to know when your last one was.
Oh, probably when I was 16 years old.
Oh, okay.
Old.
All right.
Yeah. See, it happened. It was just part of growing up,
sure.
Wasn't it, Mary?
It was. It was romantic, and we were proud of them.
Was it from Wendell Willkie?
I think his name was Abe
Lincoln.
Abe Vigoda.
Abe Lincoln, she said.
Oh, Abe Lincoln, I stepped on your joke. Mary, I am so sorry. Thank you very much for calling. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Mary.
Bye.
This is my favorite phone call of the whole year. I got an over 80-year-old girl.
How about that?
She's got my back.
I guess. All right. We
and there's no hickey on it.
A quick break.
Because
some news.
Because you couldn't reach.
Because we couldn't reach. Steve has the news and then a lot more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. There's a story in the news that you and I both seem to have missed. And we like to try and find out what's going on in the world. But there was a panicked mom who put her 5-year-old on an airplane, and it turns out everything went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Katursky, ABC News correspondent, on the line with us. Tell us about this story, Aaron.
It's really terrifying, and it's leading to a lawsuit that's being announced as we speak. A woman here in New York went to the airport a couple of weeks ago to pick up her 5-year-old son, who was flying unaccompanied, to back home, or so she thought, from the Dominican Republic. She had paid the fee to get an escort for the kid on the plane and then somebody to sit with him and the whole bit, and he was supposed to walk off the plane and into her arms. Well, JetBlue, when the plane lands, brings out a kid, presents the kid to the mother, and it's not her kid.
Oh, my God.
Come to find out that that kid was supposed to go to Boston, and her kid was in Boston.
Hmm.
They switched them, put them on the wrong flights.
All right, now I could see where that would happen, especially if it was another young boy?
Yeah, and both coming from Santiago in the Dominican Republic. One was supposed to go to Boston, one was supposed to go here to New York, and they got mixed up. And the airline said it was their mistake. It took them about 3 hours to figure out what had happened, and then finally they figured out what happened and got the kids where they were supposed to go. in the meantime, leaving this woman, Maribel
freaking
Martinez,
out.
Freaking out and thinking her son was kidnapped or something. And so she's now suing JetBlue for negligence and also for her emotional distress.
See, I don't know how that works because I know they didn't intentionally do it. And
sure.
There's two little kids flying unaccompanied. The escort that they purchased, is that somebody through JetBlue? Or
yeah, JetBlue has a you pay $100 and they have an unaccompanied minor program. This kid's 5 years old.
That's so young to go by yourself.
Well, there's that too. And many people are saying, hey, wait a minute. Why is a five-year-old flying alone anyway? But, I guess it happens. And so JetBlue takes $100 and they're supposed to escort the kid on the wrong flight. Turns out the kid who was presented to this woman had her son's passport. So there was really a foul-up.
Oh, that's scary.
And so these parents were, what? And JetBlue apologized. It gave them credits toward a future flight. But that's not going to be enough.
Over the years, Aaron, I've seen countless kids flying unaccompanied. It's always been domestic. I don't remember ever seeing it happen where we were going to a different country, but it's always been without incident. It's rarely been. I only remember one time where they purchased that option of having an escort sit by you through the flight. Usually the flight crew is just made aware of the fact that there's a
child. And they're very helpful.
They're extremely helpful. Yeah.
And you'd think that this wouldn't happen, but apparently it happened.
What does JetBlue say is the reason for this? Are they giving any kind of a reason?
They didn't give a reason for the mix-up. They just said they realized the kids were on the wrong flights, and so they got them to their correct destinations and, thought they could go on their way. But then they put out this statement of apology and offering credits to the families.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see what this woman will get in her lawsuit. I've read that JetBlue extended their apologies, refunded the flights, and offered the families credit towards future JetBlue flights. I know I would be losing my mind, and especially if a different kid had my son's passport, but it was settled. And I mean, how much do you get from something like that?
Yeah, they're just about to announce the lawsuit, so maybe we'll get a better sense of dollar figure. But I'm sure they're going to ask for quite a lot. I mean, the woman said she was terrified. She thought her son had been kidnapped, and she really had quite the scare. And, the attorney for the woman said JetBlue ought to be ashamed of itself. And then, how silly is this? But that legal action would ensue.
Aaron, I know this will seem like a question that's not important. I'm just trying to figure out how it could have happened. Were there connecting flights involved at all, or was it a direct flight?
No. Direct flights.
I don't
direct
get flights. That at all.
Well,
it's crazy. It's crazy, and the mother. I mean, can you imagine the kid walks out and ain't your kid?
No. Doesn't it seem though that maybe the point of origin here is the Dominican Republic? I think you said Santiago, right? So maybe there they had maybe just these two kids, and somehow on their files they just. Obviously, just switch them. I know it seems like how could you do something so silly, but
who escorted them in Santiago? Because that would be something. If you're letting a 5-year-old fly, it seems like you'd go in and check in with them at the ticket counter, and then say, "Bye, honey." I would also pin my name and address to the child.
Good move.
But who escorted them in? Because I could see where two little kids. Somebody just sees them and says, okay, well, here, this must be this kid.
Right.
And I could see where the mix-up is. And, JetBlue rectified
really,
this.
This kid.
Yeah, but if no one's
like
checking him in.
This kid looks like he should go to New York.
But if how else do you explain the ticket agent obviously is at fault?
Yeah, I mean, look, there was no explanation offered. Maybe we'll get something from the lawyer here in a little bit to see if the airline's given any, indication. But JetBlue acknowledged the mistake, said, look, it happened. We apologized. We gave flight credits. And I think they're just hoping to move on. They also, would, I think, give some attention to their crew, they said, in Santiago to make sure that this kind of thing doesn't happen again.
Poor thing. I can't even imagine the woman's fear when she saw, I'm going to meet my little kid, and then it's not hers.
Yeah.
That's freaky.
Aaron, can we pin this on the drunk pilots from Scotland from last week? Is there any way we can pin this on them?
Good.
All right.
Well, put a note on your kid. Isn't that a good idea?
Solid idea.
I think that's the way to go.
Yep.
Just tack it right on.
Yep.
Because Post-its will come off, so you need a...
Thumbtack it.
Yeah, no, don't thumbtack it. Aaron, thank you so very much. We appreciate it.
Okay, guys.
Aaron Katursky of ABC News telling us the horrible story of kids that got switched on flights.
Not at birth.
No, not at birth.
At check-in.
Right, at check-in. It's even worse. All right, a quick break and then more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We were talking to Aaron Katursky, ABC News correspondent, about this JetBlue flight. And a mom is meeting her five-year-old who is flying to New York from the Dominican Republic, and it's the wrong kid. And then there's another kid that was supposed to go to Boston, and they went to the wrong places. And I understand how terrifying that would be. Emotional, terrible feelings. But I just wonder how much you sue for. The kid was okay. Sometimes kids don't even get nervous about it.
Even if the kid wasn't nervous, think about you as the mom.
Yeah, but how much is that worth? $1 million? I'd go $10 million, but I wouldn't get it.
I don't know what it's worth. I guess that's your lawyer's job, is to prove that the emotional distress that you suffered during those minutes or hours needs to be compensated, right?
I guess, but how do you figure out a number?
I don't know.
Patrick?
Hey, I was going to say that the 3 hours of emotional distress for the mom, I mean, what about the emotional distress for a kid that, you know, doesn't have a parent that can care enough to fly with his kid? You know, maybe they parent-trapped the parents and switched on purpose to show them a lesson.
You know,
I'm not sure that happened.
At that age, they probably went, I don't want to go home to my mom. I want to go to Boston.
Over the years, like I said, I have seen a bunch of situations where a kid, you know, we're boarding the flight and there will be a child, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old.
By themselves?
Yeah. And I always try to figure out in my head why that would be. But I guess there's obvious reasons. Maybe
they're going to see a family member.
Right. Right.
Maybe it's their dad or mom. Maybe it's a divorced family.
Maybe the parents have split up. That's what
I
always think, too.
Maybe they're going to spend the weekend with grandma.
But the people who work the flight go out of their way to make sure that that child is safe. And, you know, this was a fluke thing, obviously. But there had to be some emotional distress because of it. I mean, if you're the parent and they present a child and go, here's your kid, and you go, uh-oh, that's not my kid, you could think your kid was kidnapped.
Okay, run to mommy.
Right. Hey, where are you going? That's not mommy.
So, Patrick, do you think the five-year-old was upset? Or you think that these kids intentionally switched tickets just to do something different? I think that's what he was suggesting. Like, these two kids are starting out in Santiago.
Right.
What if they're like, where are you going, New York?
Let's mess with them.
Where are you going, Boston? Hey, you want to switch?
It's like the parent trap, like the Dominican Republican version of parent trap.
That's what he suggested. Something similar happened to Nina. Hi, Nina.
Hi.
Hi, Nina. What happened? Did this happen to you?
Yeah, me and my brother. I'm 39 now, but when we were younger, my dad worked for Motorola, and he'd always win these like business trips or like, you know, bonus trips to some exotic country or wherever. And so my mom and dad would go pretty much every summer, and they would send us down to North Carolina to stay with my grandfather in his house in the mountains. That was really nice. So I just remember getting on the plane to go home one time, and we were on the plane, we were boarded, and we were on the runway, like in line to take off, and we were sitting across from like another family, and they started talking to us, and they're like, oh, well, what are you going to New York for? And we're like, we're not going to New York, we're going to Chicago. And then all I know is I heard on like the intercom that, you know, we had to go back to the gate and yada yada.
All because of you guys.
Yeah, but unless those people had asked us,
you'd be in the wrong city.
Yeah.
That's scary.
That is scary.
Yeah, so I just wanted to share my story.
So it does happen.
Did your parents sue?
No, because I guess they caught it before, well, somebody else caught it, not the airlines, but I guess they probably could have if we had been taken to a whole other city.
Yeah, that's true. All right, well, thank you, Nina. Glad you were found and safe and sound and made it to Chicago.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
I hit the wrong button. I'm sorry.
See how easy it is? I'm going to sue for emotional distress.
You could sue me every day for that.
I'm going to.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, guys. You know, we had sent our two daughters. They're 11 months apart. And when they were 5 years old, my wife had lost both her parents of 13 months apart from each other.
Oh, no.
My mother-in-law had passed away. We had just moved to California, and we sent them back, and they had no escorts. They were 5 years old. They all we had to do was make sure that somebody was at the airport to drop them off and show ID. And then somebody had to be at the gate when they came out.
Yeah.
Out of the plane with ID that we had already prearranged to pick them up. But they came back here to see their grandfather, which, you know, was, they were the only grandkids. He was mourning at the time, and that was something that boosted him up. So I can't see that it's something that people don't do all the time. You know what I mean? I think it happens quite often.
It's harder now because you used to be able to walk a kid to the gate.
You can't now unless you're on
walk
the,
them onto the plane.
Unless
and,
you're ticketed.
Yeah, it's, when we sent our kids off to far-flung places a couple times, and you could, Sharon would ask the airlines, and sometimes they would allow you to walk the child to the gate, and then other times they wouldn't. It was
but
kind
a
of
5-year old, I would imagine they would let you walk.
You know, it kind of sometimes was up to the whim of the, if you didn't, you know, you could pay the
right.
extra, but if you wanted to say, look, she's 9, can I just walk her to the gate?
Yeah.
Sometimes they let you do it and sometimes they don't.
Right. Even back then, I don't think they let us walk them onto the plane, but we were able to take them right up to the, you know, to the door of the plane. And then, you know, the stewardess took them from that point and put them in their seats.
Were you nervous at all about somebody that young flying?
I was. I was very nervous.
Yeah, I
you
bet.
Know? And it's, you know, it, they were my only two daughters. They're 5 years old. They're, you know, they'd been on a plane before,
right.
but never by themselves. So, yeah, I was very nervous. But it all ended up, you know, it turned out well.
Yeah,
were they nervous or were they thinking this was a cool adventure?
They were, from what I remember, like I said, they're 27 and 28 years old now. But, yeah, I think when they did it, it was more that they were excited to be on going on a plane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Joe. And one more call, and then we got to take a break. Tim, something like this kind of happened to you?
By the way, you guys are the greatest, and you make my day. You really do.
You're so nice. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you. Would you like a hickey?
Wendy's giving them away like they're popcorn.
From you or Bill?
From Bill.
Wendy, preferably from you.
All right. So what happened to you?
I had a similar experience. I used to have a booth out at the Lake County Fair here in Crown Point, and I have 6 children.
Yeah.
What I would they would come with me to the fair because I had to work the booth all day till 10 o'clock at night. And then they were back in those days, you could just let them run all over, and they did. And at a certain time, they got to come back. I put them in the car. I took them home. Well, I got having 6. I put them all in the car, and I'm counting heads. I got 1 through 6. And I start, and my wife with me, too. And we're driving home, and about halfway home, I looked in the rearview mirror, and I saw a face that I didn't know.
No.
I realized that one of my sons had made friends with another guy there, or another kid, and he got in the car with my son. And as long as I had 6, I was happy.
But you left one of yours there.
Yeah, I left one of mine there and picked up somebody else's.
Steve, do you still have that kid?
Did you sue yourself?
His name wasn't Macaulay, was it?
I went into a panic. First thing I'm thinking, I'm going to get arrested for kidnapping. And
yeah.
In the meantime, where's my kid? And I quick turned around and went back to the fairground. And the kid that I didn't know just got out of the car. And my son was standing there. And he got in the car. And then I went on home. But I think that's when I developed gray hair.
Oh, yeah, that'll do it.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Tim.
Oh, I love sharing anything with you guys.
Tim, you're the best. Sure. Thanks so much. Have a great weekend. All right. Wow. How about that? All right. We'll
it's his own kid.
It's his own kid. All right. We will take a quick break. Steve has the news because we want to give it to you. And then a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Boogie down, y'all.
You don't have to tell me twice. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. This is just a good idea is what this is. They're now making it part of your driver's ed requirement. When you go in for driver's ed, there's now going to be a special section devoted to how you should act when you're pulled over by a police officer.
I have one word, respectful.
Yeah. Yeah. But some people don't seem to know that. But I think maybe in light of all that's gone on of late, they finally figured out that this should be part of the curriculum that when a police officer pulls you over, because honestly, I remember telling my daughters what you want to do, but I'm sure there's probably some parents that have not passed that information along to their children of the correct way. For instance, can I tell you when the first time I ever got pulled over by a police officer, nobody told me not to get out of my car.
Same thing with me.
Did you? So you
got
out.
I got out. Get back in the car.
Right.
Well, no, I'm just... Get back in the car. I thought you get out to show...
It's a courtesy to the police officer. I'll come to you.
Yeah.
Stay where you are. Rest.
And
I'm
to
on my
show.
Way.
Nothing's in my hands. I'm right. standing here. I would think you wouldn't want to be in the car because what if I was hiding something?
Right. Right. No, that's one of the many things that they will teach you now if you take driver's ed. Here's the story. This is out of DNA Info. Were you taught how to interact with the police in your driver's education course? The fast answer, no. It never came up. According to Illinois law, you should have been, but as high-profile police shootings increase tension between officers and residents in neighborhoods across the country, state lawmakers here in Illinois want to make sure that kids learn what to do when confronted by police as soon as possible. That's a great idea.
Absolutely great idea.
It's a great idea. Last month, with little fanfare, Governor Bruce Rauner signed HB 6... 131.
Who's paying for this? Do we have any
money?
There's
no budget. There's
well,
no budget.
If it's a requirement, it's probably...
Included?
Yeah.
And what we're
be,
not
right?
paying?
Well, I mean, a lot of most kids take driver's ed privately now, or many do, so it would be part of that.
Right.
They
right.
do offer it at school, and you still have to pay for it at school.
Right, so the parents would pay.
So as part of this new law, HB 6131, bingo if you're Catholic,
oh, darn.
Beat you. A bill requiring driving schools here in Illinois to teach students how to react when stopped by the police. Those sponsors of the bill say that it has nothing to do with the shooting death of Laquan McDonald or the death of Sandra Bland in police custody after being pulled over. It was filed on February the 11th, around the time that federal investigators started riding along with Chicago police officers as part of their civil rights investigation into the department.
Would it be so bad to say that... We are
that it was
doing
influenced.
This. Yes.
I was thinking the same thing. I think that's a better angle.
It
don't
shows
you?
That you're trying to make some improvements here.
I know. I think that's a much. I don't know why they'd be afraid to admit to that.
Oh, because we were going to do it. We were totally going
to
do it.
Because then you imply something, too, that had someone acted differently.
Oh, I guess.
Things wouldn't have happened. I don't
right.
know, but.
No, there's something to that, Steve. I'm sure of it. You're kind of admitting to some guilt that you might not want to admit to.
Or right, exactly. Accusing someone.
Yeah. All right, Sheldon Smith's foundation, the Dovetail Project, includes what they call a street law class aimed at teaching young men ways to avoid escalating conflicts with police to the point that they become life-threatening.
Great idea.
Does it irritate you at all that it's being geared towards young men? I mean, I know the numbers.
Well, tell Sandra Bland's parents that, mom, because, you know, a woman could get... a little ornery, too, and...
I would think that this
should
would be
for
both, I would imagine. The bill was sponsored by Frances Ann Hurley, LaShawn Ford, Julie A. Morrison, among others in the General Assembly. After talking with several driver's ed teachers across the state, we realized that some of them weren't teaching what's already in the Rules of the Road Driver's Manual, Hurley said. We want all drivers to be aware of all the rules. Well, if they're saying all drivers, it should be geared equally towards men and women, I think. Though some opponents of the bill said that driver's education teachers may not be the best people to give advice on police-driver interactions, the measure ultimately passed with overwhelming support. The Tribune reported that the Secretary of State's office will develop special guidelines, but schools with driver's ed programs must begin teaching the material during the 2017-2018 school year. So that's still a little ways down the line.
Next year, next fall.
Yeah. For Sheldon Smith, the founder of the Chicago-based Dovetail Project, any education that young people can get about police interaction is helpful. Smith's 12-week program teaches black fathers between the ages of 17 and 24 parenting skills, life skills, and a felony street law class aimed at teaching them ways to avoid conflicts with police. They don't know how to look for a badge number, Smith said. They don't know how they can request a sergeant to be at the scene. We bring in police officers and lawyers to show them what they should know. I think this sounds like a really good idea. I'm surprised it took
does.
So long.
And it's funny how you and I both got out of the car, which shows you I didn't get pulled over regularly.
Yeah.
So I had no idea what to do. Somebody has texted in and saying in the 60s and 70s, You could get right out of the car and walk up to the police officer and just say, good day. I probably wouldn't say good day. What did I do? And never had a problem. I swear to you, I thought I learned you get out, show that you have nothing in your hands, and stand by your car or whatever.
I'm trying to remember why I thought that that was protocol. And I still remember when I was a kid, us driving past somebody who had been pulled over and seeing that that's what that guy did and go,
he was drinking,
that's
probably.
Oh, maybe.
Sobriety test. That's why he was out of the car.
I don't know. Maybe. Maybe.
But I didn't know. And because of that, I have told both my kids, here's what you do.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure you told your daughters that, too.
I did.
You stay in the car. You know, you.
No sudden movements.
Right.
Play by the rules, agree, you know, when they say, what about this, what about that? Answer directly and firmly and, you know, don't be afraid. But how can you not be afraid? It's a tense moment.
Oh, my God. Just this morning, I was driving and there was an ambulance coming by and I pulled over to the right, where what you're supposed to do. The rest of the cars were not really pulling over, so the ambulance had to go the wrong way.
Right.
In the other lane. And then when the ambulance went by, I couldn't get back into the flow of traffic. The people behind me, I thought you, like, it's like stop and then resume.
Right, that's how it should be. But
I couldn't get back into my own lane.
Yeah. Well, that's weird.
So you got to teach your kids that, too.
Yeah, there's a bunch of little residual things. A couple of weeks ago, we all went out to dinner. The four of us went out to dinner. And then on the way back, I don't know if I hit... Just to the left of my steering wheel, there's a knob with four or five different options for the lights on the vehicle. Like you can either have just the internal, just the external, all of them. You can do one where it sets
interior,
itself.
By the way, not what did internal.
I say? Internal. You can do one where it sets itself based on if it's dark or light to control how bright they are. You know.
Oh, the dash.
Yeah.
Lights.
And then there's another one. I don't remember what the other setting is. But it's on this knob. Well, I think my hand must have hit it or something. And even though, like, when we got in the car to go to dinner, it was light out. On our way back, it was dark out. And I'm driving. I'm like, the lights are really dim. So while I'm driving, I'm flipping that through the different settings. And then I hear, whoo, there's a car behind, a cop behind me. And that's the noise the cops make by me.
Do you have space cuffs?
Yes, the cops from My Favorite Martian.
That's
were
what it sounded
right
like. It's
Ray Walston came in and said, "You and Bill Bixby have to come to the station."
Bill Bixby, I loved him.
So it was one of those moments where I thought to myself, because I don't think I've ever been pulled over by the police with my daughters in the car. So I knew he was stopping me because I'm driving and the light, all the lights are going bright then dim, then bright then dim. And he even said to me, he goes, I didn't know if somebody was getting kidnapped. I didn't know what was going on.
Oh, you really were pulled over?
Yeah.
I thought it was just, you thought you were.
No, it was a cop who was, he was so nice about it and said, I'm just seeing, is there any trouble here? Is everything fine? And he's looking in the back seat to make
sure.
At the
daughters.
Yeah. And I said to him, I go, look, I'm not really good with tech stuff. I said, this Jeep is fairly new. I can't figure out how to make the lights work properly. And he laughed and he said, you got to understand, I thought somebody might have been getting kidnapped because it looked like a signal to me that they needed a police officer to.
Is that
come.
Genius?
Yeah.
Well, that's another helpful tip if you're being kidnapped and you have control of the lights.
Mess with the lights.
Because if you're in the back seat, you can just turn that
right.
back seat light on and off and on and off
right.
and on and off.
Right.
What an observant police officer.
Yeah. I commended
Seriously.
Him on that and also told him that his shirt was incredibly starched. I don't know why I mentioned that because I knew I wasn't going to get a ticket, but I said, first of all, thank you for doing this. Second of all, I don't know who does your shirts, but they're magnificent. And he thanked me.
Do they teach that in the driver's ed class too?
Always compliment the potential arresting officer.
And cry
always.
If need be.
Yeah, I was crying, but I had just seen Brian's song a few weeks earlier. all right, your thoughts on this. We're at 312-981-7200 if you'd like to jump in. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, driver's ed classes will be changing. They are going to be adding something to the 2017-2018 year, right, next fall?
Next fall, it'll now be part of your driver's ed curriculum. that when you take driver's ed, there will be a special section on what to do, how to act when you're pulled over by a police officer, which really, that's
it's
an important...
It's useful information.
Oh, very much so. I don't know why this isn't getting more press. This is a good thing.
All right. We have a retired sheriff on the line. His name is Dave. Dave, you've called this before, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, Bill and Wendy. I love you guys. And it's good that you don't really know what to do because it just proves that you're both model citizens.
Well you can say that about any area of life about Wendy and myself. We don't
usually
know
just you, but
sometimes
I'm included in this one.
Sure.
Well, I have to qualify that a little bit because I know Bill has not left Hickey's hither and thither throughout the...
That's true. Thank you for knowing that. That's true.
although, who had more fun? Be honest.
Wendy did.
Well, yeah, no question about that.
Yep.
I just wanted to clear up. It used to be, okay, back in the olden days, the days of Mayberry, that the officers would just sit in their car and wait for...
You would approach them.
Yeah, but that changed because that's not a good tactic. You got to remember, if you're sitting in a car, put yourself in the police officer's shoes, you're pretty much limited in your mobility. So if somebody was going to do you harm or even just take off and run, you're at a distinct disadvantage. So it's better for the officer, even though, you know, we're very aware that you could have something in the car, and that's why an officer will always, always approach a car with caution because they have no idea who you are. And you know you're no threat, but they don't.
If I was a police officer, I'm telling you, I would never pull anyone over because you don't know what you're walking into.
Well, that's true, but that's the nature of the...
I know.
But Dave, I noticed right around the time they started switching it where instead of the wrongdoer coming to the police car, the police comes to the wrongdoer's car, potentially wrongdoer. But that's right around the time where they added a second person, another police officer on the other side with a flashlight, kind of looking in the vehicle and seeing what's going on in there.
Well, yeah, we always tried to have backups available when an officer pulls over a vehicle, because again, it's another set of eyes, and especially if you've got more than one person in the car,
yeah,
it's a big concern.
Yeah. Although every time I've gotten pulled over, it's just a single officer.
Is it really? Yeah. Huh.
I don't need two to take me down, Bill.
That's how the Hickey talk ended too.
Oh,
remember?
Come on.
Yep.
All right. So
your angelic nature just is an aura all around the car, Wendy.
That's it. That's so true,
Sheriff Dave. So bottom line is just stay in your car, keep your hands on the wheel. Is that good advice for kids?
Yep. And if it's at night, turn the dome light on.
Oh, that's a good idea. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, turn the dome light on so the officer can see.
Yeah.
So it just any time there's movement in the car, the officers are always going to wonder what's going on. They're going to be concerned about not only their own safety, but okay, what are you trying to hide?
Yep.
Exactly.
I could tell you stories. I was on the street for 22 years before I went into administration, and there are many stories that I could tell you that I couldn't tell you on the air.
Really?
Oh, it's a fascinating profession. But
sure.
Can I throw an apology? I think the last time I called, which was maybe a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
I actually asked you to pass along my good wishes to one of the news people on the weekends, and you sounded like you were looking at me like I was crazy. Well, I was. I had my news people mixed up, and it was another former acquaintance. I think I worked with Veronica Carter.
Oh yeah,
several years ago over here in Northwest Indiana. I didn't work with her. I did some public radio on public TV.
Oh,
here, but give Veronica my best.
Absolutely, I promise. Well, thanks, Dave.
Who did you say last time?
Oh gosh, I've wiped that from my mind just in case.
Oh, that's all right.
It came to the fore again, so I didn't want to take a chance.
All right,
we'll tell Veronica you said hi. Absolutely.
Pass it along. Thank you so much for your info. We appreciate it. And Rhonda, really quickly here, how's it going?
Hi, fine. Just fine. This is Bonnie. Hi.
Oh, hi, Bonnie.
Hi, Bonnie.
I forgot I was going to be Rhonda. So
oh, that's
oh,
all right.
Fake names?
Don't worry. That's
Who do
okay.
you want to be today, Bill? You want to be Bobby?
Batman.
Batman.
Oh. You guys are so funny.
Oh, thank you.
You are the highlight of my day, really.
Oh, you're very kind.
But, and I'm still in mourning about Gene Wilder.
Yeah.
Bill. Really. I know. Frankenstein, I saw it 100 times. It makes me laugh. And I live in an over 55 facility.
Mm-hmm.
God, we can be living there pretty soon, Bill.
Save a place for us, please.
There's room.
All right.
You would be great. But anyway, my story is I made it up until I was 62 years old before I ever got a ticket. Now my family will know if they're listening. Yeah, I was really proud of that. But anyway,
you were proud of the fact you finally got a ticket, or proud that you made it to 62?
No, I wasn't. I was mortified. I was mortified. But no, I knew what to do, probably because of the way I was raised. And, you know, yes, sir, you know.
Sure.
All the right things. Okay. I don't know where I learned it, except I am older, so...
But did you get out of the car, or did you know to sit in the car?
Absolutely not. Oh, no, I knew not to do that.
I didn't know.
But you know what? I think the problem is that driver ed-ing for young kids is fabulous. It's great.
It is.
But I also think that we need it for everybody.
For adults, and too.
Yep.
Yes, if you get a ticket, I think if you get a ticket or... even a warning that there's something that you need to do to go to this class and just to be reminded, and it shouldn't be looked at as punishment. It should be knowledge. These people are on the streets to help us. Their policemen are, for the most part, are wonderful. I've never met a bad cop. That doesn't mean they don't exist. I'm very fortunate. I'm also white. I live in a nice suburb, but I just am so grateful for the job that they do.
You should be.
Protecting us.
Right.
But I think that people in their busy day and whatever's going on in their life due to strife or stress, whatever's going on, they just need to be reminded that this is something, and this lack of respect, it kind of falls from, I think, all that's going on in the world. You know, the rage with the elections, whatever's going on at home, or traffic sucks, or whatever's going on. People just, and these are the people who aren't either drinking or taking some kind of drug that makes them crazy to act belligerent, but...
We all need a refresher course on this, and that's
so
why we're here to help. And Bonnie, a.k.a. Rhonda, we really appreciate you calling. Have a great day.
Well, thanks. Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks, Bonnie.
Thank you.
Twice in my life, I've received safe driving citations. You get it in the
Me
mail,
too.
And it tells you you've gone X amount of months without any
I'm
kind of traffic.
I'm not ambidextrous. I didn't skip kindergarten, but I too, got the safe driver citation.
In both the times I've gotten it, I've then received a ticket within 30 days, within 1 month's time. Anytime I get a driver's citation, a safe driver's citation, I say to myself,
really?
This is the kiss of death, because both times I've gotten one, and then less than a month later, the cops have been behind me, pulling me over for something. And in both cases, it was my fault. One time I was speeding. The other time I went through what I thought was a yellow light, but it was explained to me it was not yellow.
Well, there's a problem with the yellow lights. They were shortened. Do you have a lawsuit
want
to file?
No.
Do you want to click it or ticket?
I don't know. You know what? The police officer that said something that time that I do think about all the time, I said, you know, as I was going through it, it was yellow. And he goes, you know, son, he called me son because he was my dad, I guess. He goes, son, it is a game of inches. He said, and even though you think it only took you a second, you missed it by a second is all it takes. If another car was coming through the intersection, that second would have cost you your life. And he was right. You know, you can't argue with that. He's right.
But that's why also that I've been teaching my son, Michael, who still doesn't really drive. I have to drive 20 more hours with him before he can get his license.
Wow.
He doesn't want to do it. But I say, as you're waiting at a red light, when it turns green, you still have to look in the intersection, because there are people like Bill Leff who will fly through the yellow thinking it's yellow, but it's really red. So you still have to look and pay
attention. That's true. That's good advice. Solid. All right, let's take a quick break, and then in a little bit, Ro and Anna will join us. We'll find out what they have coming up next. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.